I've taken you in talk radio with talk radio through a number of these kinds of large national impact events. And make no mistake, this is a national impact. It's it feels nice and safe, I guess, to be here in the desert right now, but it will impact all of us. What happens to a city, one of our major cities in this country, will ultimately impact everybody in the nation. Those people a lot more, but, and we'll talk about in way, you know, some of the ways that it will impact them and some of the ways that it will impact you. Now, I wonder a lot of times, you know, in talk radio, what do you do when something like this, of this proportion happens? And I think the answer is your job. You just, you take calls from people in the affected area. You talk with people who might have information about this sort of thing. I realize that in the long run, there's really no way that we can compete with those who have people on the spot, in the eye, as it were. And they do. So many networks now, from the Weather Channel to CNN to Fox to, I guess, everybody with concerns in the media in that area has people down there virtually in the eye of the storm. I was on Matt Drudge a little bit earlier tonight, in the hour prior to this program, and sort of jokingly, but not so jokingly really, said that, you know, the anchors who are down there holding onto the lampposts and taking short flights off the ground for the camera, I suppose they convey a sense of the amount of danger there is to be in this storm, but beyond that, it's mostly about ratings. I mean, really, it's mostly about ratings. I don't think anybody, radio and television and media is about ratings. And ratings equal money. It's a business. The media is a business. That's why you have the kind of media that you have today that sends reporters down to the eye of the storm, hanging on the lamppost. So somebody ought to say it. It's all about the ratings. I mentioned that on the Matt Drudge Show. And a lot more. I also said something that I want to say to you right now. And that is that, yes, of course, there's an eerie resemblance to the book that we wrote, Coming Global Superstorm, in the movie The Day After Tomorrow. There's an eerie kind of chilling moment for myself, and I'm sure for Whitley, who, by the way, will be on later. You saw in that motion picture New York inundated by water, and that's what they're talking about with respect to New Orleans. Latest info on the storm. It's, of course, still a Category 5 storm, packing winds of 160 miles an hour. 160 miles an hour, my God. It's moving north-northwest at 10 miles an hour. It is presently about 160 miles south-southeast of New Orleans itself. The impacts are already beginning. It's at 27.8 north and 89.4 west. Once again, 27.8 north. And 89.4 West. I have been watching the media now, not just today, but for days prior to this event. And I knew, I damn well knew, that when this hurricane got into the Gulf, we were going to have some kind of tragic occurrence. And they're not talking too much about it, and most of the meteorologists scoff at the global warming explanation, but that's what's happening here, folks. But the globe is getting warmer. The water is getting warmer. They're barely mentioning it, though they have certainly. The temperatures in the Gulf are going into the 90s. That water is in the 90s. And when you have a situation like that, you have the fuel for a hurricane. Hurricanes are like big air conditioners for our planet. And they try to take that energy, and it is energy, and they try and convert it. They try to do what an air conditioner does and convert it. So you could think of them as sort of rolling air conditioners for the planet. And then, of course, you can think of them in many other ways as well. So we'll do a variety of things this night. In a moment, we're going to talk, if we're able to. Now, all of this is, you know, particularly with people in the area, it depends on whether we can actually get to them. Mark Suddeth, I hope that's how we pronounce it, is an interesting gentleman. In 1995, after graduating from college, Mark Suddeth began his career in hurricane awareness reporting and research. His work revolves around using field experience and documentation of hurricanes to help the public better understand what they're up against. Using a combination of remotely operated weather stations, streaming video units, and a mobile command communications vehicle. And by the way, folks, we've got links to all of what we're talking about right now on the website. Mark and his team of five are able to safely observe, report, and research hurricanes as they affect the U.S. The data, video, and still pictures that Mark and his team collect are used in a wide variety of awareness campaigns, lectures, conferences, worldwide TV and media outlets, even within the U.S. government. NOAA, for example, U.S. Army Corps of Engineers, Federal Aviation Administration. 2005 has seen the dawn of a new era for Mark and his team as they broadcast unprecedented video and data from even the worst hurricanes, using wireless internet to literally put PC users right into the heart of the storm. Mark lives in North Carolina with the rest of his team, strategically located in Florida, Virginia, and the Carolinas. In a moment, with a little bit of luck, Mark will be right here. And as luck would have it, of course, and I told you that it may well go this way, Mark Suddeth's line is busy at the moment, so we'll try to continue to get through to him. In the meantime, I guess I want to start the program like this. I want to hear from you. I want to hear from people who are in the affected area, and doggone, it's a big area. It's really a large area of the southeast U.S., and ultimately, of course, this hurricane will continue and will affect many of you right up to Tennessee and right up the eastern seaboard. So here's what I propose. I propose, number one, that all of our phone lines, and I'm going to tell you what some of these phone line numbers are in a moment, will be open only for those of you in the affected area. And so if you have a cell phone, if you're able to get through, let me give you our telephone numbers here now. And if you are in the affected area, if you have been evacuated from your home in New Orleans, or you have evacuated, and everybody is concentrating on New Orleans because, of course, it's headed straight for, appears to be headed straight for New Orleans, but the area of impact is gigantic. Here are the numbers to reach me. First-time callers at area code 775-727-1222. And I'm putting you all on your honor to only use these numbers if you are in an affected area and if you would like to tell us what's going on, how you feel. That's the human side of this story, and it's the one that we can tell, I think, most appropriately with talk radio, by the way. Again, 775-727-1222. The wild card line, area code 775-727-1295. Area code 775-727-1295. East of the Rockies, 1-800-825-5033. That's 1-800-825-5033. And finally, west of the Rockies, the number is 1-800-618-8255. 1-800-618-8255. So we'd like to hear from people in the affected area. We'll fill a little time with that. Try to get hold of Mark Suddeth in the meantime. First time caller line, you're on the air. Good evening, morning, whatever.
Hey, how's it going? My name's Scott. I'm from New Orleans.
Hi, Scott. You're from New Orleans. Where are you now?
Actually, I'm in my living room right now with a good friend of mine I've known for about 35 years. We're going to try to ride it out. There's one other family on the street.
God, you're in New Orleans and you're going to stay?
Well, I'm on a suburb, in a suburb actually called Harahan.
What was your first name again, please?
Scott.
Scott. Sure. Okay, Scott. you know, I've done a lot of world travel, but I've never been to New Orleans. I've never been to your area. Tell me about where you are with respect to the area of New Orleans.
Okay, right across. We're actually maybe 2 miles away from the Huey P. Long Bridge.
Oh, boy.
Which is the, as I understand it, the only rail crossing south of Chattanooga, I think, Tennessee, of the Mississippi River. So we're not too far from that. Right across the river from us is Algiers, the naval support activity. Excuse me, that's kind of been in the news lately.
Why in the world have you stayed?
My parents opted to stay. My dad did anyway. My mom was actually on her way out with one of the people that lived down the street from them.
Mm-hmm.
And they got as far as Kenner. It was about maybe 4 o'clock. And curfew was going to end up being 5 or 6 p.m. So they actually had to turn around and come back home. Their neighbor, which actually live a mile away from me exactly, from my driveway to their driveway. Their neighbor is a guy who's a contractor, and he had to come back too, so at least there's somebody there to look after them. There's only one of the family on the street here, and me and my buddy, and that's it.
What are your expectations?
Okay.
As you see this monster headed toward you, I'm wondering what your...
I'll listen to...
Well, I think I'm live right now, right?
You're live, yes. You're Just turn your radio off, please.
Okay, yeah,
radio off,
dude. Right.
Yeah,
yeah,
it's got to be off.
Right, the friend I'm with is actually the guy who turned me on to you, and you know, said you played on 1350 down here.
Yes.
What is that, WSMD?
Yeah, and I think 870.
And 870? Okay, well, anyway, yeah, you know, it's one of those interesting things that we were discussing, you know, conservative versus liberal, just about everything.
But
we decided to stay. Because, of course, my parents decided to stay. I want to make sure that if anything is in need after the storm, we'd at least be here. A good friend of mine from way, way back, used to live right across the highway from us.
Well, again,
moved off to Texas for a couple of years.
Now, again, what are your expectations? They're talking about New Orleans being buried, you know, worst case scenario, under 20 or 30 feet of water.
Exactly. Well, that's just one of those things, you know, that you have to deal with when you live down here. And when you can't get out, because we weren't going to get stuck in gridlock,
I know there's a lot of gridlock out there, but
yes, there is.
There's a reason.
And I'm thinking maybe safer in the house than in the car.
Well, we got the boat in the front yard,
right? And
he's
we
got
have
a boat
moored, so just in case we, you know,
that's
we got a
good
boat.
Idea.
And got all our camping supplies. We were both in military. You know, he's in Coast Guard. I was in the Navy for 8 years.
A boat sounds like a really good idea.
Yeah, boat is choice, and I have 5 dogs too. No shelters around here would take pets.
You know, I've wondered about that. I have 4 cats, and if I had to evacuate, I couldn't leave my cats behind.
Right, and I'm thinking about all the poor people who left their animals here, and are going to come back to drown pets.
God, that's right.
And in a worst case scenario, I'm thinking, you know, maybe it won't be so bad. But then again, you pray and you keep your powder dry. So we pray and we hope for the best. You know, we don't want anybody to get filleted by this thing. But
yeah, and I hope your powder stays dry, buddy.
Amen.
All right, thank you, sir. Thank you very much for the call, and take care. Godspeed. You're going to need it. I can't imagine why anybody would stay there. Can you? I don't know if you've seen any of the graphics that they've been popping up for us to see about New Orleans, but the way New Orleans is built, it is a bowl that, you know, that's potentially, under the worst-case scenario, going to fill up. The pumps are not going to be able to handle it. New Orleans is going to be a river, 20 or 30 feet of water. How does anybody make the decision to stay under those circumstances? Even pets. I mean, that's almost... But then how does anybody leave one of their animals? Now, I'm a strange person about animals. Maybe not so strange. Maybe there are many others like me. But to me, they are my children. To my wife, they are our children. We really, really care about them. And I don't think... I could walk away... knowing there is almost a sure chance that my pet is going to die, is going to drown. I don't think I could do that. Let me try our guest right now. I understand his phone may be clear. We'll see if he's there. This is Talk Radio on the Run, something we do a lot around here. So let's see what we get. Let's give it a try. And here we go. Maybe. Mark? The ring is good. It was busy. Rings are good.
Hello, this is Mark.
Mark, hi. This is
hey.
This is Art Bell.
Hey, Art.
And your phone was busy.
Busy? Oh, that's not good. Nobody was on the phone with me, though. That's weird.
Yeah, that is strange. Well, that's
the hurricane.
Yeah, the hurricane. We'll blame it on that. And it's going to be blamed for lots of things, I guess. All right. First of all, Mark, I read something about you. I read a little bio, but I want to understand exactly why you're down there. Well, first of all, you're where? You're in Gulfport?
Yes, I'm in Gulfport, Mississippi, where things are going downhill quickly.
That's what, about 80 miles east of New Orleans?
Something like that, yeah, roughly 80 miles.
80 miles east of New Orleans. All right. Well, why are you there? What, you have some sort of automated stations that you place at certain points trying to find out about hurricanes? Tell me about this. What do you do?
Well, we're trying to do that tonight. So far with the first one, I'm going to be honest with you, we didn't have any success. Something went wrong. We had to set it up. It's automatic. It's recording, but it's not transmitting. We have two more opportunities to put another two of them out there and transmit.
Wait, Mark. What are them? Describe these things you're talking about.
They are automated weather stations, and they have the ability to record the wind, the air pressure. They have cameras to record into VCRs, digital recording as well, so that we can basically replace people with these automated, remotely operated recording units to do like a storm chaser would, except I don't think a storm chaser should be down there during this one. It's going to be kind of lethal.
I've been wondering exactly the same thing. I hear somebody whispering to you.
Sorry. Whispering to my partner.
Yeah. Tell your partner he can talk to you in the breaks.
Yes, sir.
So the first machine that you tried to deploy went belly up. It's not it's apparently recording but not transmitting. Is that right?
Yes.
And the whole idea of these is to be sort of like robots, have eyes, and to transmit live to the Internet, correct?
Right. It's alive and kicking, but something happened and it's not transmitting to the Internet. We have two more opportunities. We're getting ready to set up in just a little bit.
I see. What about you right now in Gulfport? What are you in some kind of vehicle now or what?
Yes, Art. I'm in a modified Chevy Tahoe. I modified it. It is. It has its own weather station on it, its own streaming webcam live right now with audio, actually. I should say streaming video, not a webcam. And that's going as we speak. So it's like a mobile command center, a mobile communication center, a mobile weather station, and it has all of our equipment in here, and we're all soaking wet right now.
So you're sending a stream to the Internet right now, is that correct?
We are, indeed.
All right. And so they can, the audience can potentially see what you're seeing right now in Gulfport?
Yes. The site, I had to set it up as a subscriber-based site because you can imagine if 100,000 people try to hit streaming video, the bandwidth will be beyond my capability to pay for. And the site is called hurricanelivenet.com. And folks can sign up for the rest of this year and all of next year as we experiment and learn what we're doing. And hopefully we can learn from the feedback from people that sign up. But yes, Art, right now there is a live video transmission. A good friend of yours named Paul, he's been watching it out there in Nevada for a while as I've done my testing, in fact. And he has been interacting with me. I can talk to Paul through the streaming video because of its audio, and then Paul can send me text messages to let me know, for example, that you're trying to reach me.
Yes. Get off the phone! Art wants you! Yes. Indeed, Paul Bowman runs Air Internet here in town, and that's how I connected with you. Again, I think the way to cover this tonight is just to talk to all of you, and we're going to do that in addition to some others. Headline, just breaking news. I want to thank Ramona, by the way, for keeping me up on all of this. Headline, oil soars to record as Hurricane Katrina shuts U.S. production. Crude oil soared to a record above, brace yourself, folks, $70 a barrel in New York after Hurricane Katrina forced companies, including Exxon Mobil Corporation, Chevron Corporation, and others to shut operations down in the Gulf of Mexico. Oil had its biggest gain in 29 months as Katrina may become the strongest storm to hit the Gulf Coast since 1969. So beware out there, and I'm sure with the rise in the price of barrel of oil to 70 bucks, you're going to see it at the pump almost immediately. We'll be back with Mark in a moment. By the way, everybody, we're going to do this kind of ad hoc this morning, and I don't know how long I'm going to be with you. I may stay with you well past the official ending of the program, which means that those affiliates that carry the show into replay will simply be carrying us live instead. I haven't made up my mind about that yet, but I believe it was a Picayune whose headline down there was simply regarding New Orleans. It just said in big, bold, black letters, Ground Zero. And if the worst-case scenarios are realized, and, my God, CNN just ran a crawl on the bottom that said eyewall waves have been measured now at 60 feet. 60 feet near the eyewall. Can you imagine that? I can't. Mark, welcome back.
Hey, I'm right here. Thank you.
Okay. Mark Suddeth. Is that the way your name is pronounced, Mark Suddeth? Is that correct?
That's right. Just like Skip Suddeth, the actor who used to be on Third Watch. That's okay. My cousin.
All right. I'll be darned. All right, yeah. Mark, if you would, what are your conditions right now?
Right now, we had a wind gust to 63 miles per hour here in Gulfport down at the Erie Pier, right on the Gulf of Mexico. The air pressure is 1,001.8 millibars, and the air temperature is 76.7 with light rain. Can't get any more detailed than that.
Okay, no, that's very good. Very good indeed.
And that's live from our truck right here, Art. That's a very good weather station right here.
I understand. Can you tell me about where the hurricane is right now, and what is the latest regarding its movement? A lot of times as these hurricanes get very close to shore, they sort of take a little jog one way or the other, and I guess it could be crucial for New Orleans. Is that true?
That's right. This is the most crucial time coming up from New Orleans the next several hours as to whether or not this will take a jog more towards New Orleans or more towards the east and impact, you know, right over where I am in Gulfport. As it looks right now, it is still on a heading east of New Orleans, where the eye itself would not pass directly over New Orleans.
What would
so,
that
so far?
Okay, Mark, what would that mean for New Orleans if it continued and stayed on the track it's on right now? What would they expect in New Orleans?
They would expect winds in excess of 100 miles per hour sustained for a long time, several hours. Driving rain, they will hear things breaking, the power will go out, there will be this enormous power flashes around. It'll look very much like some of those deadly lasers in the War of the Worlds movie, and the sound is very similar to that, thankfully, though we're not being attacked by aliens, although people are going to think that it is unearthly because it is an incredible experience to go through the core of a major hurricane, much less a Category 5 hurricane, the worst of them all.
All right. Also, before hitting land, many times hurricanes either do a quick strengthening or a quick weakening. Sometimes that happens. Are you seeing any of that?
There are some subtle indications that it won't. Well, let me answer your question directly. I don't see any indications that it'll do any quick strengthening or quick weakening, but it may do some weakening prior to landfall, because as its massive circulation goes over land, it draws in some drier continental air, and any changes in the dew point of the air, the humidity, can make this very fragile but very powerful force of nature change within just a couple of hours. And we're actually, as much as I'm fascinated by these natural events, I'm really hoping that it'll weaken actually dramatically, so that we do not get this doomsday scenario from Mississippi and Louisiana that's been painted before us.
Mark, I wonder if you can explain this to me. I've been watching the coverage very carefully, and they explained about eye wall reorganization, that every now and then a hurricane lets its eye wall become ragged, or that becomes the case, and then it reorganizes and becomes a very tight eye once again. What is that process? When it does that, what's going on?
That is a very difficult thing to describe, an eye wall replacement cycle. I do not know much about that, and neither does the National Hurricane Center or the Hurricane Research Division, believe it or not. And they will mention that in their discussions, that we don't understand the what's called thermodynamic process of what's going on in the eye wall of a hurricane, that sometimes an outer eye wall will form and contract, choking off the energy to the inner eye wall,
right,
weakening the hurricane, and we don't know why. They just don't know why yet. There is not somebody yet that I know of who can say it's because of X, Y, and Z.
Gotcha. I'm sorry to have asked that kind of apparently impossible to answer question, but
excellent question.
It came because I was watching a discussion of the eye wall replacement, and then also a discussion of what you just talked about, that there can become an outer eye wall that's even bigger. It's sort of good news and bad news. The old eye wall is much weaker, but then now there's this new outer eye wall with even winds that extend, hurricane winds that go out much farther. Is that correct?
That's right, absolutely. And these fluctuations can change in a matter of hours. Let me give you an example. Hurricane Charley that I was in last year near Punta Gorda, Florida, in this very vehicle that I'm talking to you from now.
Right.
It was a small hurricane, and it sort of developed a dry ring around its core or its eye wall. They call it a moat, and it literally dried out in the hurricane's core there, and a very small donut-shaped inner eye wall developed. Only 5 miles across was the eye. And just like a skater pulling in her arms, the smaller her radius is there, the conservation of angular momentum, the faster she spins, and Charley spun up very quickly to a lethal Category 4 and passed right over this Chevy Tahoe that I'm talking to you from right now. We measured 132-mile-per-hour wind before the anemometer was pelted by rocks from the highway that we were on and ultimately destroyed.
My God. I'm seeing news that three residents breaking in for just a moment of New Orleans.
Sure.
A nursing home died during evacuations that are going on, so it's already begun. This is going to be a very deadly, it's already been a deadly storm in Florida and now already in Louisiana. It has the potential. I mean, just before I talk to you, Mark, I talked to a fellow who is in New Orleans, and he's going to stay. Now, I can't imagine making that decision, knowing what I've seen on television about the structure of New Orleans. This appears to be the worst case scenario coming true. Do you see it as worst case, or might some miracle still occur?
Well, there's always a chance for a miracle to occur. As long as I'm seeing it more east of New Orleans, that core, that inner core, the radius of maximum winds is the worst part of the hurricane. It's where the pressure gradient is the tightest. The air pressure is lowest right in the center. It's like somebody pulled a plug on the atmosphere and all the air is trying to rush to get out. And as long as that'll stay enough away from New Orleans to either the east, I don't think it's going to happen to the west. I mean, it'd have to hit Morgan City to go to the west, and that doesn't look likely at all right now. So we are really hoping for an eastward shove to spare New Orleans, but what spares New Orleans devastates Biloxi, Gulfport, areas,
Mark,
maybe even Mobile Bay.
Mark, when are we going to know?
Oh, boy, we're going to know, I think, when the center of this hurricane begins to cross near Venice in the southern end there of Louisiana, on the toe of Louisiana. But even then, Art, we may not know, because we thought we knew, a few hours before Charlie was supposed to hit Tampa Bay. We thought we knew it was going to do that, we being everybody who tracks it.
Right.
And a 15 or so degree change in angle, and it hit Punta Gorda, changing their lives forever.
That's correct.
It's not over till it's over.
Okay, but I meant time-wise. I've got 10:48 West Coast time right now. There's going to be a time between now and 5 o'clock Pacific time, I imagine, when you're going to say, okay, here's where it's hitting. What time is that likely to be, if you had to guess?
I think by 8 o'clock in the morning Eastern time, we're going to know if it's really going to go over to New Orleans or split between Gulfport and New Orleans. But it's still going to be bad in New Orleans, maybe just not the worst-case scenario. It's that fine of a line. We're really, dancing on a razor's edge here as to what the track, just a few degrees east of north, can save a world of hurt for the Crescent City.
If it becomes the worst case, I take it that you also have seen on television descriptions of what might occur in New Orleans? You know, the 20 or 30 feet of water that New Orleans could be left with. Would that, if that did happen, Mark, and again, I may be asking you a question way out of your field, would that be the end of New Orleans? I mean, with all this awful mixture that would occur of everything in a city like that, would that be...
It would be the end of it for a while, if the worst-case scenario happened. You're going to have, like you said, a terrible mixture, and it would be the end of it for a while. You're going to have huge economic impact to the United States. It is very difficult to comprehend what could happen. There are some in FEMA and the Army Corps of Engineers whose job is to try to comprehend with computer models and different types of simulations for storm surge. And
I know they're actually doing those models, Mark, right now. Actually doing them right now, trying to decide if some buildings in New Orleans will stand or fall. We've heard information there might be 200-mile-per-hour wind gusts. They don't know a lot about that. We've heard that just a few moments ago that they have 60-foot waves around the eye wall. That seems, I can't even imagine that.
Six-story building there. It's very frightening. And let me give you another perspective on it. High-rise buildings, typically 300 to 500 feet high, you can tack on a category up there for the wind speed. I have learned that by going to the National Hurricane Conference year after year for several years. A little side note, the National Hurricane Conference for this year, for 2005, was held in none other than New Orleans.
New Orleans. So the winds are worse as you go up quite a measure, correct?
Yes. And they usually say by one category. So if it hits as a four, then winds at some of those tall buildings in New Orleans could be easily at a category 5 strength up above, and that will send glass and debris and air conditioning units down onto the streets below.
They call it vertical evacuation, Mark.
Right.
Would you be comfortable in a high-rise building with something like this headed toward you?
No, not at all. That's why I'm not in New Orleans. I would not have any place to go except up. And if I survived the trauma of this terrible event with all the noise that's coming, if indeed, of course, they get the core of this hurricane, then it would just be nightmarish, and I don't know if I could ever recover.
What made you decide on Gulfport, Mississippi, where you are now?
That I have lateral movement, that I can go east or west with a fairly quick drop of a hat, if you will, using Interstate 10. If I'm in New Orleans and it starts to flood or a levee goes,
yes.
Oh, I don't even want to talk about a levee going. I mean, goodness, if a levee goes, you only have seconds until it's over.
Again, Mark, I may be asking you questions you're not equipped to answer, but for those people remaining in New Orleans, and I don't know what the number is right now. I was hearing numbers like around 100,000. Do you have any idea how many people might still be there?
They said from some of the news reports that I heard that about 75% of New Orleans evacuated, which is an extraordinary number.
The population of New Orleans being what, 600,000-700,000 in the city?
I believe so. That's a very good estimate for sure. There's some 30,000 to 50,000 people, however, again, from what I'm seeing on the local news channels down here, at least 30,000 people who have taken shelter inside the Superdome.
Yeah, this supposed shelter of last resort.
Right.
Can I ask you, do you know anything about the Superdome? For example, I've heard that they can't use the lower portions of it because they could conceivably flood. So I wonder how many people they can actually hold there.
Well, I saw the news footage that everybody was playing down on the field. And maybe they'll move them up later, but the footage I saw, there was kids playing right there on the football field. So,
well, that's early, I suppose, yeah.
Early, sure. And the Superdome, you know, maybe one thing it has going for it wind-wise, it is shaped like an upside-down bowl.
A dome,
and
yeah.
So that has to be to its benefit. And if the water will just not breach it and cause just horrific human loss of human life, I don't think they'd put people in the Superdome as a refuge of last resort if they thought that it could actually flood enough to kill everybody.
And that it's certainly been designed to withstand that. But even at that, if
right.
the worst-case scenario came, they would be virtually trapped in the Superdome.
Yes, for days.
For
weeks.
At least, yeah, days or weeks.
Yeah, it just keeps getting worse the more we talk about it. It's that's why so many people I've seen on the news, national news stories, are just crying because it's just... it's terrible. If this comes to pass as it looks right now, it'll definitely dwarf. This is not a bold statement. It'll dwarf what we went through with September 11th in terms of loss of life.
Mark, the temperatures in the Gulf, the water in the 90s that's feeding this godforsaken storm, how unusual is it for the Gulf waters to be at 85 and then well into even the 90-degree mark and better? That seems awfully hot, right, isn't it?
Yes, it's very unusual. We typically see waters in the mid-80s in the Gulf of Mexico. Even off the coast of North Carolina where I live, the water temperature is 30 degrees Celsius, or getting very close to 86, 87 degrees Fahrenheit,
mm-hmm.
and that is well above normal. Most of the Atlantic Basin is very much above normal right now, temperature-wise on the sea surface. And also, the deeper that water is warm, the more upper oceanic heat content is available for these lethal hurricanes. And the Gulf of Mexico has areas of very high upper oceanic heat content.
Yes. So how much of a percentage of the growth of this storm do you think can be attributed to the unusually warm, even almost hot waters in the Gulf?
A good deal of it. It's hurricanes are a product of the heat and the latent heat and the humidity and the moisture in the air.
Yes.
But it's also a product of a very well set up environment that the hurricane itself extends up to 200 millibars in the atmosphere above 30,000 feet or so. Cyclonic circulation up to around 30,000 feet, maybe more. And then at the top of that is a large, warm, anticyclonic flow of air spreading all of the heat sucked in at the surface out into the stratosphere with just completely unimaginable energy.
Can you hold through the break, Mark?
Yes, and then after the break, we have to get to work once again, but we'd love to chat with you once we get these other two units set up. Yes, sir, I'll be right here.
All right, hold on then through the break. And in addition, rolling that video live on the Internet, that is a subscription service, but he's got another free website, and we've got a link on the Coast to Coast AM website right now for that. It will tell you more about it in a moment. Latest 1 a.m. advisory, that's Central Time advisory, places this horrid monster, Katrina, 135 miles south-southeast of New Orleans. Winds remain at 160 miles per hour. Now, again, this is the latest advisory, still at 160, moving north-northwest at 10 miles per hour. That puts it at 28.1 west and 89.6 north, west and north, I guess that's right, 28.1 and 89.6. Pressure is 910 millibars. That's up a little bit. Now, they're saying the eye is going to come ashore between Venice and Grand Isle should it continue as it is right now. The eye wall is presently about 90 miles now south-southwest of the mouth of the Mississippi. Mark, welcome back.
Hey, Art, good to be here. Thank you.
I won't take up much more of your time at all, Mark, but those are the latest figures. They're talking about it coming ashore, the eye between Venice and Grand Isle, should it continue as it is at the moment. What does that mean? What's that going to mean for New Orleans? I mean, if it comes in between Venice and Grand Isle.
If it moves due north from there without any east trajectory.
Yes.
It could bring that core right over Lake Pontchartrain, where they will have north to northwest winds over 100 miles per hour. The good news, though, real quick, though, is it is down to 160. We need every little bit we can get, and we'll take it. But if it does continue the way it is, I mean, I'm looking at a radar shot live right now. It's only 7 minutes old, so it's relatively live from the National Weather Service, and I can just see the eye wall, and it is due south. The eye wall appears to be due south of Grand Isle and the toe of Louisiana. So if it moves straight north and did not have any east component at all.
Well, it's got a little bit of, I believe it's got a little bit of west component.
Correct, northwest.
North-northwest.
So it's still looking very bad for New Orleans. It is still looking very bad. We're going to really hope for that eastern jog to begin at any point. And eastern means just getting it from north, northwest to north. That'll help a lot, but it'll devastate. Don't take this to think that, oh, it'll be great. It will devastate Mississippi. And where I am, I'm at 89.1, and the center of this is at 89.6. The center of the eye is at 89.6. The core extends out to 89.1.
All right. What I want to do, Mark, if I can, is to have you on again, perhaps later in the show. I know you're not going anywhere, right?
I am going to stay here in Gulfport, set up these next two units, and I'm going to stay in the hotel and hunker down when that core gets here, well away from the water, so we can eliminate that Mark is going to drown, because that's not going to happen. Now I have to hide from the wind. Place my Tahoe in a safe location, most likely on the leeward side of a building, and then just wait it out when the sun comes up. And all of this will hopefully stream from our Tahoe right here as it happens.
Oh, yeah, I want to plug that for you. You've got a free site, right? I believe we've got a link up on coasttocoastam.com right now. So you've got a free site up there, correct?
Yes, I've been working with two great companies, if I may mention them, Lowe's Home Improvement Stores and Sprint.
Sure.
To sponsor my hurricane awareness and public information work, which is mostly through HurricaneTrack.com, just like it sounds, HurricaneTrack.com. And over the last 5 years, I have helped, through the support from Lowe's Home Improvement Stores and Sprint, hundreds of thousands of people through the Internet with my work telling people why hurricanes are as bad as they are, because I go through them, not just in North Carolina where I live, but in Florida and Texas and now Louisiana. Who better to talk about how to run their own radio show than Art Bell, right? Who better to talk about hurricanes than Mark Suddeth, at least in terms of what to expect?
All right, Mark. We'll get back to you as the show continues and as the eye gets closer. Thank you very much.
Thanks a lot for having me, and wish us all luck down here. I think we're going to need it.
Godspeed, buddy. Take care. We'll talk to you later on in the show. And can you imagine that? He's in Gulfport. There's really no way, as I mentioned earlier, so frequently these hurricanes take unaccountable last-minute jogs. Now, maybe it's the way the landmass begins to affect the hurricane as it comes ashore. Maybe it's the sudden change in barometric pressure. Who knows? You know, even the weather guys don't really know what the intimate details of what drives these monsters. We are here to observe and comment, and that is what we shall do in a moment. I'm going to attempt to talk to a very old friend of mine whose name is Lynn Whitlake. I interviewed him one time previously on this program. He lives in New Orleans many, many years ago now. Lynn and I were together in the United States Air Force, stationed at Amarillo Air Force Base, and like young fools, we chased tornadoes in a Volkswagen and took footage and sold it to local TV stations and that kind of thing. So as you can see, my fascination with storms is very deep indeed. Lynn is in Lake Charles, mostly out of harm's way, according to the track we see right now. But we'll try and get hold of Lynn, who, I want to say, he grew up to be a weatherman. That's the path he took while I went into broadcasting. Really, he did too. Reporting the weather is certainly, I suppose, broadcasting, isn't it? So we'll try and get Lynn on the phone in a moment. As you might imagine, we are all about Hurricane Katrina this night and this morning across the nation, paying attention to it. And now, as I mentioned, a very old friend of mine, his name is Lynn Whitlake. He works for one of our affiliates here on Coast, KAOK, in Lake Charles, Louisiana.
Hi.
Lynn, hey, buddy.
How are you doing, Art?
Well, I'm okay. Far safer and nice and dry here in the desert. You're in Lake Charles, is that correct?
Mm-hmm. Okay. I'm kind of on the sidelines watching this show tonight.
Yeah, and I'm sure happy not to be in the path of this.
Oh,
right?
Most certainly. Yes.
Okay, Lynn. Everybody are now, the audience knows that you and I in the Air Force. How long ago now, Lynn?
Well, that was vintage 1962-63, right? And through that, that would be, what, 42, 43 years ago?
Oh, we were young and dumb.
In many ways.
Yes. We chased tornadoes, sometimes all the way up into Oklahoma, in a little Volkswagen to take film. And anyway, it was sort of a hobby.
Well, we were doing storm chasing before there was such a terminology.
That's right. You and I did it. You were more of the maniacal suspect in doing this than was I at the time, but I loved it. I admit it. I loved it. And we're lucky we didn't get killed, Lynn.
Uh-huh.
All right. So here comes this monster, hurricane. We were talking on the phone earlier when I asked you to be on with me about the temperatures in the Gulf. It's sort of in passing mentioned in some of the television coverage. But there are astounding temperatures in the Gulf. The water is the engine that drives and builds these monsters. To what degree is that true, Lynn?
Well, this is because, hurricane doesn't run off of water. It runs off of water vapor. And the warmer the water temperature, the more readily the water evaporates into the atmosphere. And it's the water vapor that provides the energy to the hurricane.
Mm-hmm.
And as an example, you get a hurricane such as this massive storm we have now, to pass over the water, it'll get upwelled quite a bit, and the water temperature will drop considerably. Then if we have additional hurricanes over that same area later on this season, they will probably not be anything like what we're experiencing out there right now.
In other words, this hurricane is absorbing the real hot stuff.
And also turning over the water.
Yes, indeed.
From lower depth.
So would it be fair, Lynn, to think of hurricanes as kind of giant air conditioners for the planet?
Well, yes, that's it. They're kind of like a heat engine that it allows the heat from the lower levels to escape into the upper levels, definitely. That's certainly one way of thinking about it, yes.
Okay. When the people at the National Weather Service or NOAA are asked whether, any part of this can be attributed to global warming, forget the argument now about whether man's hand or a natural cycle of nature is upon us, whatever it is, it does seem as though everything's getting warmer. The water, the air, we're getting all these new records all the time.
Mm-hmm.
And the Gulf is, how warm, Lynn?
Well, water temperature here off the South Louisiana coast off of Cameron here has been running 91 degrees recently.
Oh, my God.
And I don't remember that ever happening since I've lived here. It's been about 30 years now. Generally speaking, we peak out in the mid-80s during the summertime. And 87, 88 would be considered very unusual. And I do not ever remember. And it may have happened, and I just didn't see it. But I don't ever remember seeing 90-degree water temperatures before.
So then is it really fair that somebody from NOAA, for example, would laugh and shake their head, no way, when asked whether global warming might be a factor in what's going on here?
Well, I don't know. You know, I'm kind of neutral on that subject. I've just, all I can tell you is what we see happening, you know.
Yes.
That there's certainly a cycle which is going on right now. That's certainly part of it. It could be contributed by, I guess, a combination of the two, really.
Yes. On the current track, I assume you're watching it very carefully, Lynn.
Sure am.
On a scale of 1 to 10, how poor does it look for the city of New Orleans now?
Well, right now, as close as this thing is in, a slight jog this way or that way could make a lot of difference. And sometimes these hurricanes do tend to make a slight jog as they cross the coast.
Yeah, I was talking about that. Is that the effect of land on the hurricane?
Yeah, it's friction on the land will cause it to jog one way or the other. But the massive size of this hurricane, the hurricane force winds extend out 100 miles, and even tropical storm force winds 200 miles. This a slight jog this way or that way is not going to make that much difference as far as the damage, wind damage goes. It'll have more to do with how the water comes into New Orleans. And you just have to wait and see what happens. I mean, there's no one can actually pinpoint it to that degree.
I know they're doing computer modeling to see what buildings might or might not hold up under certain conditions.
Things like TV towers and radio towers,
yes.
Things like this, these will come down too.
That's quite true. So local broadcast facilities probably will go away. I would imagine there's some sort of emergency broadcasting facilities that are ready to be set up. I have no idea, but I would think that.
Mm-hmm.
You do the weather on one of our affiliates, KAOK in Lake Charles. A radio weatherman, Lynn, is kind of unusual.
Yes. Uh-huh. Well, actually, I started in television here many years ago. And then the guy who owned the TV station sold it and bought a radio station. Actually, we're actually a part of a group in Cumulus. And KAOK is one of the radio stations I broadcast on. Actually, the mother flagship station is KYKZ.
Well, a lot of TV stations, of course, have weathermen. But you're actually the only radio weather guy, and that is your full-time job, right?
Yes, it is. There are not many of us, you know, and I'm kind of like you. I work out of my house here. That's where the weather center is set up.
Right. And you provide, what, hourly? Or what is your current schedule? Have you retired as you've aged, as we both have?
No. No, I'm still doing it full-time, Art. I'm not in semi-retirement yet.
I see.
I don't know how much longer I'll go like this.
What does full-time mean for you?
We run a normal schedule from 7 o'clock in the morning to 5 o'clock in the afternoon, and then of course, besides this, whenever something's going on, such as the case today,
yes,
we just go whenever we're needed. Plus bulletins and special, advisories that come up during the hour.
I know many people in Lake Charles know you very well, and they depend on you, Lynn, for good reporting, I guess, of the weather. It can get really rough down there in situations like this, so they probably depend on you to tell them what's happening with this hurricane, right?
Yes. Mm-hmm. We've been following this along since actually it was Tropical Depression number 10 to begin with, if you remember.
I
and then that failed, and then it reclosed off, and they renamed it Tropical Depression number 11 before it became Katrina, which, of course, tracked across Miami. And then you do notice how people reacted when this thing went through Miami. They thought, oh, my goodness. This was only supposed to be a one, and everybody had this tremendous reaction to this storm.
They weren't ready.
No, definitely not. They were not expecting what they got. But just pretend, just imagine what would have happened if Hurricane Andrew, a Category 5 storm, had tracked just a little further north, because it tracked just south of Miami. Then they could have made the comparison.
Didn't this tropical depression, it was so weird, as it went across Florida, everybody thought it would immediately poop out, but either it maintained its strength as it crossed Florida, southern Florida, or it even built up a little bit over the marshy lands.
Well, that's part of the deal there. For all practical purposes, the Everglades is water, you know, and that's where it tracked across. And now I don't know what the water temperature is in the Everglades, but because of its shallow nature, I wouldn't be a bit surprised if the water temperature is 95 to 100 degrees out there. So that's one reason it didn't lose any more strength than it did. It did for a short time, for several hours, drop down into tropical storm strength. And then, of course, immediately upon emerging out on the southwestern side of the peninsula, began to regain strength again. And from there, it's all history. You know the rest.
Help me out with something here, Lynn. I'm going to ask what may be some dumb questions, okay, about hurricanes.
All right.
One of the things I noticed is that during the day with this hurricane, it seems to have sort of held its status quo, and the big jumps in the building, like from Category 3 to Category 5, occurred almost in the blink of an eye in the overnight hours. And I always thought the sun being out, adding energy, would cause more building to occur during the day, but no, it occurred at night. I don't get it.
No, this is relative to this eye replacement cycle that you were talking to Mark Sudduth about. That's what resulted in that change in intensity there.
Okay.
Whenever it goes through one of these cycles, the storm tends to weaken somewhat. and it went through this entire cycle.
And then strengthen again.
Yes, immediately, yes. Once the cycle was complete and that eye cleared up, when you begin to see that well-defined hole from the satellite picture, that's when it, you know, suddenly increased.
Okay, you heard me ask Mark about the whole eye replacement thing.
Mm-hmm.
Do you have anything to offer in that category?
No, I really don't.
You
don't.
Either, huh?
Mm-mm.
So it's one of the, what, science's great mysteries? We don't understand the process of...
Well, they're in the process of working on that right now, but that's above my pay grade, I'm afraid, so to speak.
Apparently, that's why they didn't ask the people at NOAA. It may even be above their pay grade right now. In other words, nobody knows about this sort of thing. Should we hope for an eye replacement phase to begin, I don't know, within the next number of hours?
It could. They've discussed this possibility. You know, it could happen at almost any time. And just have to, like I say, wait and see. You know, there's not that much more time before it's going to reach the coast. I'm just noticing on the observations last hour, there are 100-mile-an-hour gusts at the mouth of the Mississippi River already.
Already?
Yes.
100
already.
Miles an hour?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, my goodness. Once again, my old friend, Lynn Whitlake, and I think that maybe, Lynn, you're known by a different name there. Is that correct?
Yes, uh-huh.
All right, so that everybody there understands who they're hearing, if you don't mind. The name you use on air is?
Rob Robin.
Rob Robin?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, I think that's very important. A lot of people probably say, I know that guy's voice! So, Rob Robin is the name you know in Lake Charles. All right, listen, we can't talk about the eye wall replacement because even you and even the people at NOAA apparently don't know about that. What do we have to look forward to after this, the rest of this hurricane season, Lynn? What does it look like to you?
Well, I know this hasn't been advertised too much because of Katrina, but it looks like there's another hot prospect, 800, 900 miles or so east of the Lesser Antilles, trying to close off into a depression. It may have done so. I already haven't looked at the latest tropical weather outlook. I could do that, actually, here while I'm talking to you.
Okay, be my guest. All eyes right now, naturally, and of course...
I'll see if it's done it yet, because, like I say, everything's been so much, you know, focused on... Let's see here. Okay.
Yeah,
area of low pressure associated with tropical wave gradually becoming better organized about 275 miles southeast of the Cape Verde Island system has the potential to become a tropical depression over the next day or so. That's one of them.
Another one.
An ill-defined area of low pressure is located about 590 miles northeast of the northern Leeward Islands. Shower activity associated with this system is poorly organized, and upper-level winds are not favorable for tropical cyclone formation. So
Okay. We've
got one out there in the infamous Cape Verde area that might be our next friend.
All right. Is this going to be the story from now on? That's an impossible question for you to answer. But, I mean, is it going to get worse and worse? Are these years of hurricanes going to be more and more violent? Is that what
well,
you think?
Well, they tend to go in cycles of, you know, like 20 to 30 years. And we have been in one of these cycles since about 1995, when there seems to be more, greater number of hurricanes developing on the average every year. There are some off years when you have El Nino, you have strong westerly winds aloft across the tropics, which tends to shear off these tropical systems, many of them, before they can develop. Mostly, when we're in this cycle we're in now, we'll tend to see more, on the average every year, hurricanes, which has been the case for about the last 10 years. So maybe another 20 years, we can look for a break.
Another 20 years. Okay, I'll keep that in mind. In the meantime, I'm watching the track right now on CNN, and even I can see at this point that if it were to continue on its current track, it would virtually, it seems to me, that's just me talking now, but it would pass virtually right over New Orleans.
Yeah, they have it like in line to go right over Lake Pontchartrain if it works out the way it is now. But again, it a little jog this way, a little jog that way at the last minute could change that, you know. But it's still good, no matter how you cut it. I mean, if you're dealing with winds, what will probably be 120, 130 miles an hour by the time it gets that far inland, you're talking about a disaster, you know.
Well, suppose it does go over the lake.
Depends how the winds. I mean, in one angle it'll push the water into the city. Another angle it'll bring water from off the Gulf into the lake, and then as it goes by, push it down into the city. You got the river on one side. I noticed that people were talking about the dikes being the levee being breached or broken. The water will come right up over it. I mean, it'll just simply blow the water right up over it. You know,
right over it.
Yeah. It just depends. We'll just have to watch and wait and see how it all evolves.
Mm-hmm.
Too close to call.
Have you heard any recent news on the number of people remaining in New Orleans?
Before we started our conversation, I think I heard something on CNN about 100,000 people, something like that. But I've heard other figures of 250,000. So I don't really know. You know,
this is kind of an event unprecedented, I think, in all of our history, that a hurricane of this size would head directly toward New Orleans. It's just the nightmare scenario of them all, isn't it?
Exactly. Exactly. You know, it's something you don't even want to think about. I keep my fingers crossed that something happens here and they come out okay.
Lynn, you study the weather. You really study the weather very closely. Are there any serious experiments being done anywhere in the world that you know of to alter the course of hurricanes, to affect hurricanes in any way at all?
I haven't heard anything since those old silver iodide experiments they did back way, what was it, in the 50s, you know, seeding the clouds and
yes.
All this.
Oh, yes, of course.
I haven't heard of anything, you know, recently.
You would think going on somewhere, considering the amount of monetary damage and lost lives and all the rest of it, that would be some kind of high priority. And since those old days of, you know, dropping stuff in the clouds, there'd be something new.
Mm-hmm.
But you say no.
Well, I'm not. That doesn't mean there's nothing going on.
That's right.
That I've heard of.
That's
you know.
Right. That's right. Well, you're way west in Lake Charles. I take it that really, large as it is, this hurricane is not going to affect you at all, or will there be minor effects where you are or what?
There'll be minor effects. I can step outside right now, and normally at this time of night it's perfectly calm. There's a definite northeasterly breeze blowing about 5-10 miles an hour, and we've got this high cirrus shield over us with occasional middle clouds from rained out spiral bands coming out of the system trying to move into our area. But see, on this side we've got this dry flow coming down from the north, and as the spiral rain bands approach us, they tend to diminish, and it makes it a little tricky trying to forecast the probability of rain for tomorrow.
Mm-hmm.
So I've stuck a 50-50 chance in some of the rain bands will reach us, but we shouldn't see any significant weather this far west, anything more than some gusty winds and maybe some showers. That would be about it.
They're saying this is about a 1 in 500 year event.
Yeah, but the minute you say that, next year there'll be another one just like it somewhere, you know? It's just happenstance. This particular storm happened to move into this particular area. I mean, it could be like I say, if Andrew would have come inland just a little bit north of where it did back in 1992, you would have been talking about another catastrophe.
Lynn, I know your passion for the weather. It's obviously as strong as it ever was during the days that you and I risked our lives chasing tornadoes, but obviously your passion is as great as it ever was. So maybe this question is good for you. Shouldn't we know more by now with modern science and modern everything, Lynn?
They're working as fast as they can.
They can, yeah.
You've got research scientists working, every aspect of the weather, but you can only know what you can know. I mean, you can only discover what you discover, and it just takes time.
They're talking about a foot of rain and 28-foot storm surge. That's on CNN right now. A 28-foot storm surge.
Immediately to the eye, right where the eye wall makes landfall, right. That's where it'll be.
Does it, if the eye wall, I mean, it's a bullseye, I suppose, either way, if the eye wall hits you, but does it matter which part of the eye wall?
Yeah, the right side, the northeastern quadrant, anything from 12 o'clock to 3 o'clock.
Uh-huh.
Remember, you follow what I'm saying? If you put a clock on the...
Of course I do, yes.
Yeah, that northeastern quadrant is the most dangerous quadrant.
For wind?
For the whole thing, for tornadoes, for the storm surge, because you're on the right side of the counterclockwise revolving wind field, so that pushes the water on up. If you actually get on the other side of it, the water sometimes will drop down, actually, a little bit. And then, of course, there's the danger of tornadoes embedded in the rain bands, mostly the outer rain bands, and they're under tornado watch right now throughout that whole area to add insult to injury. It's just how the systems are, or the system is built, that it ends up like that.
Well,
you're going to get hit by a hurricane. It's best to be out to the west of it than it is an equal distance to the east of it.
And you're way to the west of it, and good for you. What are you going to do? Are you going to try and get a little bit of sleep before the day of reporting begins for you? You begin normally reporting on the radio about the weather when?
At 7 o'clock in the morning, yes. But I get up about 5 o'clock to... start assimilating information,
Yes. So you've got to get up actually shortly, and I'm going to let you go, Lynn, and thank you. Just thanks a million times, buddy, and I will never, ever in my life forget the times we spent together.
And I won't either, especially when we started radio together. I was on that bootleg radio station at Amarillo Air Force Base.
Now, you listen.
That's how we started in the business.
That's right. That's exactly right. I remember leaving that barracks-built radio station on many a day to chase some kind of eye wall or another with Lynn here, hoping for footage, hoping to see a tornado. And so that's our past, folks. We were kind of crazy. Lynn, thank you for being here.
Well, thank you for calling, Art. I've enjoyed it.
Have a good night, buddy. That's a very, very old friend of mine, Lynn Whitlake, and I thought he ought to have a comment on this, as I'm going to let Whitley Strieber do shortly. In the meantime, I want to stress again, we're going to take calls as this show progresses, and we're going to take more and more calls from the audience. And I would like all of you, if you would, to exercise a little bit of discipline, because we want to hear from people in the affected area only, people who have evacuated only. That kind of thing is what we want to have on the air. And that's about what I think talk radio can effectively do, is exactly that. First-time caller line, you're on the air. Hi.
I just missed talking with Rob there.
Oh, yes.
I didn't know that when I was in college, they used to write the college paper about him chasing tornadoes.
Yes, we did some crazy things, sir. You're actually in Lake Charles also? Is that correct?
I'm in Lake Charles also, and I was wanting to get some information about the Louisiana Offshore Oil Port, which is one of the biggest offshore oil ports in the world, just south of New Orleans.
Oh, yes. I would imagine everything's closed, isn't it? In other words, everything would be shut down. The oil rigs out there have shut down. I just had a story that oil went rocketing over $70 a barrel.
Gas prices are up 20 cents in Chicago.
20 cents?
On the market.
Since when?
Since this evening. It was on the hourly news.
Good God. Up 20 cents.
Per gallon, yes.
At the pump. At the pump in Chicago.
No, that's when the pumpers are buying it.
Oh, I see. Okay.
New Orleans had the lowest price for gas, oddly enough, at $2.45 a gallon.
Mm-hmm.
But that won't last long. The interstate was clogged today.
Yes.
But that Louisiana offshore oil port was not built to sustain this kind of hurricane. It was built to sustain 143-mile-an-hour winds, and the seas are right at, I think they said they had 65-foot seas.
Yes.
And it's not built for that either.
Well, what they actually said was they had 65-foot waves around the eye wall.
And this will, it's not built for that. That would take years to rebuild, and it's about half the Gulf of Mexico's production goes through there.
Good Lord. All right. Well, thank you very, very much. I appreciate the call. And again, I suppose from that point of view, it is hitting us at an absolutely awful time, isn't it? Just when we're beginning to bend, not perhaps yet broken with regard to oil and gas prices, something like this comes along. Actually, the least of our worries, though, right now, a city, a very important city to the U.S., New Orleans, its fate is literally in the air. Its fate at this hour is literally in the air. We could lose an old landmark city. I've never been there. The people who have love New Orleans. And to actually lose a city is unthinkable. To have a situation where 20 or 30 feet of water could be covering one of our major cities, where 1,200,000 people, or 1 million people at least, have left and will have nothing to come back to. All of this is almost unthinkable. What could happen to those who remain, also unthinkable. Wildcard Line, you're on the air. Hi. Hello? Wildcard Line, are you there? Going once? Going twice?
Hello?
Oh, you
Hello?
Are there.
Oh, my God.
I almost
oh,
hung up on you, dear.
I'm sorry.
All right.
Okay. No, I'm in Baker, Louisiana. I live in New Orleans. I love the city. It's such a beautiful city. And yeah, we're just all just devastated. We're not sure, you know, what's going to happen. And it's looking really scary. And with a lot of hurricanes that come in, you know, not a lot of people always get worried. Because it's always iffy, but now that the meteorologists are saying it's for sure, you know, leave, get out. It happens so quick.
You say you're in, give me your location one more time, please.
Baker. And Baker, it's outside of Baton Rouge.
Outside of Baton Rouge.
Mm-hmm.
And how are you likely to be affected there?
Well, you know, I'm not quite sure, because we're getting a little bit of rain, and we've been told that it really shouldn't affect us that badly here.
I see.
I mean, New Orleans is a bowl, and it's, you know, it's a lot closer to the coast. So, I mean, we think we're okay here. So we've decided to stay, and I still have friends that have decided to stay in New Orleans, actually. So the number that you gave at 100,000 to 250, I would say the max, really, because I have a lot of friends that have evacuated, but I still have a couple.
A couple who have remained. Of those that remained, what in the world? I mean, what is their reasoning to stay, knowing it's that bowl, knowing what could happen?
A lot of people have ridden out hurricanes for years and years. And, you know, a little damage or a lot, but still nothing devastating. And I think people just stick to that, even as bad as it gets. Some people actually know the danger and say, yeah, we'll probably lose the roof of our house. You know, like, why are you staying? I honestly don't know. I in the past have with Ivan and Lily and Isidore, I stayed, because if which I know it's silly, but I mean, if they say it might hit or it might get to a three, you know, then for whatever reason, it's just such a hassle to pack up and move the traffic. And
of course
it's all worth it. Of course it is. But, you know, it costs so much money, these trips, to take quote-unquote vacations, you know. But, and it's miserable, and you're in the car for hours, and you spend so much extra money, and, you know, you come back and nothing happened. You know, a lot of people after, I don't know which one, a couple of years ago, nothing happened, really.
There is that, I suppose. You're right. I understand, thank you, the psychology of what you're talking about, that you've been very scared before. The authorities have said, you've got to get out of here, you've got to evacuate, and people have done so. Category 4, the top of the scale is 155 miles an hour. And that's where we are right now. The hurricane is at 155 miles an hour. That puts it at the very top of Cat 4, 1 mile per hour more, and it's back to a Category 5. So while it sounds good, it's not quite as good as it sounds, in that it's still every bit as powerful. So I guess if you want to be optimistic, and I would like to be, because this truly is the worst-case scenario approaching New Orleans, everybody's nightmare, at least it's a movement in a favorable direction, if not really meaningful in terms of less damage. It certainly is movement in a slightly favorable direction, and that's a wonderful thing. Pressure is 910 millibars. It's located at 28.2 north, 89.6 west, and it still would appear as though New Orleans will take the brunt of the storm. If it continues as is right now, New Orleans is in just dead in the sights. Now, the levees, the water, the size of this storm surge, all of that remaining incredibly dangerous and probably going to breach several of the protections that New Orleans has. Nevertheless, at this hour, able to report to you an obvious slight improvement and sort of a little bit of a hopeful sign, dropping to the very top of the Cat 4, or Category 4, on the Saffir-Simpson scale for hurricanes. Right back, and when we do get back, it's an obvious duh. Whitley Strieber is a very good and old friend of mine. Together we wrote a book called The Coming Global Superstorm, as I know you're aware, which became the movie The Day After Tomorrow. So seeing what we're seeing manifest right now in the Gulf of Mexico is, believe me, for the both of us, a very eerie feeling. So appropriately, in a moment, Whitley Strieber. Again, one more person to sort of officially chat with here, Whitley Strieber, in a moment. Then we're going to begin taking calls. And when we do, it's only going to be from people either with incredibly important information or people in the affected areas, those remaining in New Orleans, those evacuating from New Orleans, and that would be many, many of you out there, and I think that's what talk radio can do. Just one quick note, Victor from San Diego says, Global Consciousness Project art is going nuts. Sounds like a Geiger counter on steroids with frequent whistles thrown in. For those of you who have been monitoring that, I have two things to say. One, I'm certainly not surprised that it's going berserk. But two, and this should stop the questions that are inevitably going to come, no, I would never in a million years consider doing any sort of consciousness experiment in the middle of a situation of this sort. It's the worst case scenario in my mind for toying with that power, and very bad timing. So I'm simply not going to do it. Don't ask. You know, I made this decision actually now a couple of years ago, and I'm not going to toy with it any further. I recognize it's real, I recognize its power, and I am not going to toy with something of this magnitude. That said, here comes Whitley Strieber, author of The Coming Global Superstorm, co-author with myself, and, of course, many, many other books. And Whitley and I have talked about this sort of thing since we got together. Whitley, welcome to the program.
Well, it's good to be here, Art, and there is one thing that we can do, which is pray.
Yes, of course.
And which my website's newsletter sent out a request to everyone who takes that newsletter this evening to please do so. I have seen the power of prayer in my wife's situation.
I'm all aware.
Last fall, and so I know the Coast audience is good at this, so do try. It's not an experiment.
Right.
Hopefully, maybe we'll get it down to a Category 3 if all goes well.
Yes, prayer is in order, absolutely in order.
Indeed it is.
And frankly, at this moment, that's about all that's left, Woodley, is prayer.
Well, it is.
What's going to happen is going to happen. It's right there. So, Woodley, you and I have written a lot about climate change, rapid climate change.
And this is part of it. It is exactly the sort of thing that I was afraid and you were afraid would start to happen, and it is happening, and the National Weather Service is saying this is only the beginning for this year, that there are going to likely be even stronger storms or more storms between now and the end of the season, which probably won't come until mid or late October. So we could be back on the air in a few weeks with another storm. Hopefully we won't be.
Hopefully not.
Unfortunately, New Orleans, the situation there it's almost unimaginable if this does not drop back to the point where the storm surge is under 15 feet.
Right.
And if the levees are breached, right now, they are looking at estimates predicting 60 to 80% of the city's houses destroyed by the wind. And with flood damage, in addition to that, a homeless American city, a million people without homes.
Did you say 60 to 80% of the buildings?
Of the houses.
Just destroyed?
Yeah, the houses in New Orleans are... I don't know how long it's been since you've been there, but it's...
I've never been there, Woodley.
Oh, well, I love New Orleans. I've been going there since I was a boy, and I must admit that I don't have much memory of the times I went there in college, because I tended to go there during Mardi Gras, and anyone who's done that will understand what I'm talking about. But I did have a lot of fun, that I do know.
I'm sure.
And we were just in New Orleans in last September and having a wonderful time, but it's an old city, and the center of the city is not built to withstand this kind of weather at all. The older homes there, the big old trees will go down. The graveyards are not deeply dug. And the result is that the coffins are going to come out.
I had heard, Whitley, that in New Orleans a lot of people were actually buried above ground. Is that true?
That's correct, yeah. And you're going to have, in addition to the fact that there is a big chemical industry, a gasoline fractioning industry around New Orleans, so this water, if a massive flood occurs, is going to be toxic and filled with corpses. I mean, it's just... it's unimaginable. I mean, you talk about a disaster of biblical proportions. This has been something that planners in the Army Corps of Engineers have been worrying about and concerned about through the past two administrations. The result, next year, the Corps of Engineers budget for New Orleans is going to be slashed by $71 million, and planning or a study to figure out how to plan for the storm that's happening
tonight
is being shelved. Shelved.
I wonder if the city of New Orleans is threatening with being shelved itself. I mean, if there was, for example, 30 feet of water, if that horrible thing occurred, and there was 30 feet of water covering everything. You're right. It would be this toxic, absolute toxic soup that I suppose potentially could make New Orleans, not to mention getting the water out, but even if you did, uninhabitable for I don't know how long.
Well, for a very long time, and maybe permanently, the problem being that if what's left behind after it's pumped out is too toxic, it might be become impossible to live there anymore. And that could happen. If this stays the way it is, going in there with 150 plus mile an hour winds, mm-hmm. you're going to see a storm surge that will substantially breach the levee system. and this scenario in some form, hopefully not the worst one we're talking about right now, will unfold. It will happen. Hopefully, if it drops down to a Category 3 and you start to look at 130-mile-an-hour winds, 140-mile-an-hour winds, perhaps not with the thing beginning to break up, maybe it won't happen that way.
Well, but, it would sure have to start breaking up quickly. You know, I'm watching, as I'm sure everybody is, some television. I've got CNN, and the pictures that they're still showing, the radar photographs they're showing, of the storm show the eyewall extremely still well-defined.
Well-defined and
big.
The other thing is that along with the slight decrease in storm intensity came a decrease in storm speed. And that means only one thing, that it may increase again in intensity, especially as dawn comes.
Oh.
The reason the storm is like this, and we started on Unknown Country a couple of days ago, four days ago, warning that this was likely to be a very serious storm, because we could see the way it was tracking in the Atlantic, it was almost certainly going to cross Florida and come intact into the Gulf of Mexico. From now on, any time a tropical storm comes into the Gulf of Mexico intact in the absence of a powerful high moving down from the north in the continental United States, there's tremendous danger for a simple reason. Right now as we speak, the Gulf waters this is the second warmest season on record for Gulf water.
Hmm.
And it is like a pressure cooker, that Gulf. Because the water is very warm, there is a tremendous problem with sea life, precipitate decline of sea life in the Gulf. The Gulf is becoming a time bomb, not a time bomb, and it's blowing off right now.
Yeah.
And we're going to see this again and again and again.
Whitley, let me stop you and ask you, going back to what you were saying, with this eye wall reforming and all the rest of it, it went through that in the early hours, not too far from dawn, central time, I believe, yesterday. I always thought that a hurricane would intensify when the sun was out and there was even more heat and more energy being poured into it. But no, this hurricane chose the very early morning hours to do its intensifying.
Well, that's usually when they do intensify.
Why?
The reason is that the cooler air in the upper atmosphere drops lower, and when that happens, the warm air billowing up from below
is more in conflict with.
And that happens during the early hours of the morning, and unfortunately, because the carbon dioxide and methane that's now in Earth's atmosphere in large quantities holds heat closer to the ground. Heat isn't radiating into the stratosphere the way it used to, and this is a result of which the upper atmosphere is much colder than it used to be. And this is why when this storm started, we were warning that it was going to happen very quickly. And in fact, it went from a Category 3 to a Category 5 to a Category 4 to a Category 5 very quickly.
Shockingly quickly.
10 hours faster than the original National Weather Service prediction.
Absolutely.
Because the stratosphere is much cooler than it has been in the past, and the lower atmosphere and the water are much warmer. And this is the scenario that we outlined in Superstorm, and it's happening before our eyes, quite frankly. I mean, we're going to see many gigantic hurricanes. I mean, this is going to become, unfortunately, the norm, and you're looking at a hurricane right now that if we're lucky, it won't take out a major American city. If we're lucky, it won't take out a major American city.
And that is going to take luck now from what I can see.
It's luck and prayer. That's all we've got left. And think of it. Last weekend, nobody dreamed this thing was even coming.
That's true.
Just last weekend.
Yeah, you're absolutely right.
Yeah, and we got another depression out in the Atlantic, and in the same area that Katrina started, and we could have another situation that if weather conditions don't change, and they, I don't know that they will, where we're looking at another one of these things coming up somewhere. I mean, it's totally impossible to tell where right now.
Whitley, is there any location in the entire along, we have a lot of coastline in the U.S., thousands and thousands and thousands of miles of coastline. Is there any single place along all those thousands of miles of coastline that that would be more serious for a hurricane to hit than exactly where this one is hitting?
No, because this is this city is below sea level. It's the only coastal city in this country that's below sea level.
So it's the worst possible place that it could
be hitting. Worst scenario, and this is why experts have been urging that there be planning to understand what to do to prevent New Orleans from being destroyed by a Category 5. That planning should have been going on 5-6 years ago.
Well, there was a man, they did some interviews on CNN and elsewhere, and he's been repeating this nightmare scenario. He's one of the planners of something or another in the city, some official guy, and he was saying, I've been screaming my lungs out about this possibility, and now here it is.
And it's a little line item deep in the budget, and they just slashed it. $71 million is going to gut the program that exists, and you'll hear them declaring an emergency and talking on the TV and the radio about how sorry they are for the poor people in New Orleans and everything else. No one will be talking about the fact that they slashed the budget and never did the planning that should have started years ago to save this city from this very scenario that's coming down on it like a
Out of curiosity, Whitley, what could they have done?
Well, the major thing that needs to be done there is to understand what kind of water pressures the levee system can take, especially down at the mouth of the Mississippi, and what kind of what sort of maximum storm surges can be expected, and where to put that water when it appears, because it doesn't have to go across the levee and into the city. I mean, we're intelligent; we can figure out ways to get it to go other places safer. And that would be what it would be all about, is revision of the levee system, essentially.
It would have to be, I guess, from what I'm hearing, one gigantic, very expensive revision of the levee system, because I'm hearing that this could be so bad the water will just, they talk about filling a glass of water and then blowing, and the water just blows right over the edge of the glass, right?
That's right. That's correct.
So,
and yes, it would be expensive, but what do we have to make some choices here. We are going to see, we are in the middle of a climate change situation. Sudden climate change is occurring. It's taking place right now. Methane is outgassing in massive quantities in Siberia because the tundra in Siberia is melting much faster because it goes farther south than the tundra in Alaska. The permafrost is melting. We see that the great columns of cold water that used to drop down south of Greenland that were driving the Gulf Stream. There were 12 of them. Now there are only 3, and they're not moving very strongly. We see the Greenland glaciers are turning into torrents of water. We see less ice cover in the North Polar region than at any time in history.
Jason area, 75 mile per hour gusts. So I'm trying to stay as abreast of this as I can. In the meantime, we have with us at this hour Whitley Strieber, and we're just going to kind of be going in this program. I'm not saying when we're going to end it. I kind of have an option to go as I want to go, and I'm going to just sort of watch and decide. We're going to play this whole thing by ear. That's what talk radio does best. Just sort of shoots from the hip. And so in a moment, we'll have Whitley back. We'll continue to watch the situation, give you details as we can. Katrina. Good morning. I'm Art Bell, and we're watching Katrina as it bears down on New Orleans. Paul from Calgary, Alberta says, hey, Art, referring to an earlier fast blaster. He's not kidding. The Princeton eggs are absolutely going berserk. Well, I'm not surprised at all by that, nor shocked in any way. I would imagine it to be so. That power is real. That power, I think, is established in my mind beyond any shadow of a doubt. But I reiterate, I don't understand this power, and therefore I'm not going to use it except to ask you to pray for a situation, a favorable outcome there. I think that's about as close as we can get, and it's virtually kind of the same thing, but not quite. Traditional prayer will be just fine. At any rate, Whitley, welcome back.
Well, it's good to be back, Art. I wish it was under happier circumstances. Just I'm just receiving a report that, 4240, which is 50 miles east of the mouth of the Mississippi River, is recording waves with heights of 40 feet and more right now.
And where again, please, is this?
That's 50 miles east of the mouth of the Mississippi River. And as you know, the National Weather Service is looking at possible waves as high as 28 feet.
Yes.
And that could be the kind, that's the kind of wave that would severely overtop the levees. And that storm surge is that strong, if it's above 20 feet, in fact, and significantly above 20 feet for any length of time, it's going to flood New Orleans.
Okay, here's a question for you. Suppose the worst scenario came true and New Orleans was inundated and uninhabitable virtually for some period of time. I suppose people would begin asking if it should be rebuilt in the same place again.
Well, the question would be, could it be rebuilt?
Well, I guess that would be first. Could it be done? But even beyond that, should it be done? You've just finished documenting a lot of changes going on in the world right now that are going to produce increasingly large storms from your point of view. Is that a fair statement?
Well, that is a fair statement, and I think that areas that are marginal, like New Orleans, are just at risk. And yes, I think the question of whether or not we should absorb that population into the country, or try to rebuild the city if it was a economically feasible thing to do in an engineering project that could be accomplished. Well, that's a decision that will have to be made if this happens, if it's that bad. And you know, I have to tell you, I'm such an incorrigible optimist, and I just can't believe it's going to be that bad.
Everybody hopes you're right, Whitley.
I certainly hope I'm right, but I have to say that the reality of it is that this darn thing is already, say, still way stronger than it needs to be to cause this to happen. And
all right.
A good possibility that toward dawn it will strengthen again.
Yeah. It's
unimaginable.
It can go any way at all. But, Whitley, if by some miracle and God's will, New Orleans survives to be habitable and it's all okay somehow, isn't this enough of a shock and a wake-up call that after this, assuming they survive, they have to do something, change the system of protection there, or in other words, isn't this such a shock and wake-up call that they're going to have to move to change it?
Well, the problem is this. Other cities, Galveston, Houston, Miami, cities along the Atlantic coast, other cities on the Gulf Coast,
yes,
are all going to be clamoring for help, all of them. And how is a decision to be made as to which ones get it and which don't? Already, the administration has made a decision with regard to New Orleans, which is essentially to ignore the problem and to abandon it.
I know. I guess, though, I was asking, might this not be a big enough shock to cause them to rethink that?
I think at least that they would say they will. But then, you know, also knowing that it's not too likely to happen again, and not forgetting the fact, I guess, or they will forget the fact that I believe it was last year that Florida got hit by four hurricanes
right,
in a row.
Right. Right.
They won't want to spend the money. They won't want to spend the money, and you know there are other cities. I'll tell you a city that is in dire need of real planning and significant work on its seaward facings is New York City.
New York City.
Absolutely, because they not so much Manhattan, but Brooklyn is at jeopardy. If a storm like this were to strike New York and Long Island, that area would be terribly damaged, Category 5. This is, I believe, only the fourth Category 5 that has actually made landfall in the United States. The last one of any significance, the last Category 5 was Hurricane Andrew.
I don't know that that's going to be the case, Woodley. They did lower it to a 4. It's at 1.
Well, let's see what happens in the morning.
You seem to be suggesting that you believe there could be a strengthening. God, how could that happen?
Yeah, I do, because I just see those very warm Gulf waters, and the only thing that's preventing us that would prevent a strengthening is if the hurricane invested the land sufficiently overnight to where it couldn't draw enough energy to strengthen.
Isn't that possible? But, I mean, we've already got a portion of the hurricane over land, right?
Yeah, but it's slowing down. It's down to 12 miles an hour, and if it slows down more, the more it slows down, the more dangerous it is. And unless, of course, it went into reverse, which is unfortunately not going to happen.
Right.
But it slowed down from 13 miles an hour to 12 miles an hour, and mm-hmm. we'll have to look and see what the next advisory says, if it's down to 10 or 8.
Isn't that odd, actually? Isn't it more normal for a hurricane, as it begins to actually touch land, to speed up and traditionally up into the northeast part of the U.S.?
It's really variable. It depends on how it's coming ashore, as to whether or not it's going to exactly what's going to happen. They will stop sometimes and churn for a while as they make landfall, because the friction of the land surface is greater than the friction of the water against the air, the moving air, and it does tend to slow it down. But then what will happen is that the hurricane will literally kind of roll up the front of a high pressure system. They can get to going pretty fast when they do that, even over land.
Yes. Well, I've heard that there's effectively absolutely nothing affecting this hurricane. In other words, in terms of systems or winds that would push it or direct it in any way, it's virtually with nothing.
No, there's a high, but it's pretty stable. It's not moving over the central United States and over across North Texas. That is not moving. And
well,
no
Woodley, is this country, with the global changes that you talked about, is America going to have to rethink how they're building cities, where they're building, where they're farming, where they're doing just about everything?
Well, unfortunately, there's no way to predict yes is the answer. The problem is there's no way to predict how. I can assure you, if you live in Atlantic coastal areas or on the Gulf Coast, you need to think very carefully, because your future may be limited in those areas. As far as the rest of the country is concerned, Art, there's just no way to tell. The main problem is going to be things like Europe is experiencing right now, or just the past few days,
yes,
is a phenomenal drought in southern, in Spain and Portugal, and flooding in central and eastern Europe beyond, in fact, so far outside of the records that it's never really happened like that there before. At the same time, a few weeks ago in Mumbai in India, they had 37 inches of rain in a day. Now, that's so much rain that cattle drowned where they stood.
So you're describing a situation that's worldwide. You're saying don't just look at this hurricane. Look at everything that's going on in the world and see a pattern.
You see a definite pattern of rapidly intensifying weather activity. It is getting much, much more intense.
I think it's absolutely undeniable, and I think most people would join us in observing that, because it's happening before our very eyes. You can't very well deny it. But on the other hand, Whitley, you see the CNN anchors talking to the people at NOAA, and the people at NOAA, when asked about global warming, just laugh.
Well, they have to.
They have to?
They want to keep their jobs.
Oh, that would be a career-ending move, you mean, to say,
I don't think it would help. John McCain and Hillary Clinton, a Republican and a Democrat, just recently, a couple of days ago, together went to Alaska and essentially came back with the news that the place is melting.
Yeah, that's right. And I saw the statement from Senator McCain. That's what he said, that essentially that Alaska is melting.
Unfortunately, the administration has made a commitment from long before Bush was even in office that this isn't happening. And the fact that it is happening is just, you know, too bad for them. I mean, I always say nature is numbers.
I shouldn't laugh, but I mean, you can politically say, this is not happening. I mean, it's like... It's like, I don't know, it's like having your wife come home, find you in bed with another woman, and just telling her, you don't see this, hon. You're not seeing this.
It's not happening.
It's not equivalent.
And you would be making decisions under the radar of the country, and that a region as vulnerable as this should have the budgets in the areas that might help protect it cut, slashed even. Is simply incredible. I mean, it's like throwing matches at gasoline.
Mm.
It's ridiculous. It's utterly irresponsible, and I'm sorry to see it. I'm not a particularly political person. I'm an old-fashioned, middle-of-the-road American. I'm not a Republican. I'm not a Democrat. I'm not a liberal. I'm not a conservative. But I am practical. I'm real practical. And practical says we need to work on this. Because we got a lot of people in this country who have beautiful lives in a beautiful country. We want to keep it that way. That means we have to pay attention. Because in nature, no matter what you may say politically, what you want to believe or don't want to believe, or what somebody, some idiot's telling you on the radio, and this doesn't happen to be one of them, I do know what I'm talking about. Two and two in nature is always four. It's never going to be three and three quarters or four and an eighth, no matter what they say.
Well, I guess unless they say, no, it's three. That is our decision. Here, we're signing here that it's three. So there you have it.
Then we pay the price.
Yes.
Just like the people in New Orleans are paying the price right now. We pay.
Yeah.
They say that.
I guess I don't know what else to say, Whit. It's what it is. We're going to ride out the next several hours and see what happens. But either way, you've brought to light sort of an angering aspect of all of this, that there was a study just slashed that would have, you know, looked at how this city could have been saved.
At how to save New Orleans from a Category 5. Yeah.
And they decided not to do it. Perhaps the thinking is... there is really nothing that can be done. Could that be?
No, that's not absolutely not true.
That's not fair, huh?
No, it's not true. The first thing you need to see, you need to figure out which, for example, we don't even know for sure which levees are at jeopardy right now, because that sort of study has not been done. And depending on the angle at which the hurricane approaches a city like New Orleans, or approaches this city, approaches New Orleans, certain levees, some levees will be in jeopardy of being flooded over, others will not. But if you had planning and you understood what the situation was, you might be able to strengthen or have strengthened already by raising their height the levees that are most likely to be breached. And that would help enormously. Enormously.
We're not long-term planners. We're not good. Americans are not good at long-term planning. We never have been. We seem to operate by, I don't know, the emergency of the moment. And then we act. But we don't plan long-term. People are only here on Earth so long, and I guess that has a little to do with their thinking, Whitley. In other words, I'm going to be here so long, and after that, hey, we can't think like that anymore.
You know, when the British began working on the mouth of the Thames to protect London from inundations, from the ocean, back in the 60s. Now, if there is an enormous storm surge in that area, London will probably not be flooded because of the work that they did and have been doing. This is work that we should have started on. The planning should have started in the 70s, and the work should have been completed in the 80s. Instead, we sit here tonight just ready, having to pray, hoping we won't lose a major American city.
Yeah.
And incidentally, a city through which one-third of the energy fuel products that we consume in this country passes.
That's going to be a gigantic issue.
You are going to see gas prices go berserk next week.
That was my next question. And there's the answer. Next week, you'll see them going berserk. Is that?
The futures are going to be probably up limit all 5 days, would be my guess, unless it's not as bad as it looks like it will be now. And if that's the case, then it won't, obviously it won't get that bad. But right now, it just looks terrible.
Is there any report yet, Whitley, that you're aware of, about how the oil, I guess no one knows how the oil platforms, right now are faring, right?
In all likelihood, they're fine. The platforms are shut down and evacuated. There may be some damage, but they are mostly modern oil platforms are engineered to take 200 mile an hour sustained winds.
What about the refining, infrastructure?
It's very vulnerable.
It is.
It's vulnerable primarily because of all the piping and so forth that's exposed directly.
Because getting oil is one thing, but you have to refine it to get gasoline. Without that, of course, prices go absolutely up and out of sight. You think that'll happen just because of the futures anyway?
Well, it'll happen. It'll happen because of the fact that these refineries and so forth, and the oil platforms need to be shut down. And for an indefinite period of time, and if New Orleans is flooded and the area becomes unviable, then there's going to be a substantial amount of production of gasoline storage and production infrastructure that's going to stop working for an unknown amount of time.
All right, Willie, listen, we're coming to the end of this hour. I want to thank you for being here. And I'm going to take some calls. I'm going to try and take some calls from the affected area, but I really thank you for being here tonight. Winds remain at 155 miles an hour. That's about 1 mile an hour under Category 5. So it's an extremely dangerous hurricane. Moving north at this moment at 12 miles per hour. Again, north. So let's see. It's 110 miles south-southeast of New Orleans, moving north. The pressure is 915 millibars. That's up a little bit. So what we're going to do now, I think, for however long we're going to do it, is to take calls. And if you would please, here's the way we'll line it up. On the first set of lines, I would like people only in the affected area. And by first set of lines, I mean the first-time caller line, the wildcard line, and perhaps the East of the Rockies line. All of those, it seems, would be appropriate for affected area callers. And then on the other two lines, West of the Rockies, International, we will go ahead and take calls because that's what talk radio does. But obviously, people on those lines cannot and will not be in the affected area. So with that, all of that in mind, let us begin. First-time caller line, you're on the air. Hi.
Hi, how are you, Art?
Well, I'm all right, sir.
Well, I left New Orleans probably 12 hours ago, give or take, and has averaged a little less than 19 miles during this journey, an hour.
Hmm.
It has really been a long trek for the last 12 hours.
What highway have you been on?
Everything was very congested coming out. I ended up taking a back road, an old highway, airline highway outside of New Orleans, and took I-90, and I'm about 220 miles outside of New Orleans now, and there's still a steady, there's a caravan, let's put it that way, of cars that are still constantly moving, looking for accommodation, and people aren't finding any all the way to Dallas, really.
Hmm. Do you have any idea how many people you had talked to who said they were going to stay and try and ride it out?
It's ironic that you say that. My business partners and very close friends, a handful of them have decided to stay. I think that at first they were probably misinformed about the strength of this, and I think that that's probably common for a lot of people.
Boy, they sure have been. They've been slamming it on the media. I don't see how you could miss it.
Well, I think there's a lot of people from New Orleans that sort of have a poor psychology about hurricanes. They've stuck through many of them. Last year we had Ivan. It was a very close call. Many people evacuated. And I think that it sort of, people waited a very long time and thought, you know, it's sort of like, thought that this was going to escape us.
The Chicken Little syndrome. The Chicken Little syndrome. In other words, they got through it before, they'll get through it again. That kind of deal.
Absolutely. I was planning on staying and got a phone call at 6:30 in the morning. And literally overnight, I think this is what happened to a lot of people in New Orleans. All of a sudden we woke up and it was a different storm. And people had to make changes very quickly. And I think that contributed to the congestion leaving the city. But some of my friends are trying to stick it out. They have natural gas generators that don't run off of, typical gas. If they should last for a very long time, they're tapped into the natural gas lines in the city.
I'm curious about something. What does it mean? I mean, when the mayor and the governor say mandatory evacuation, I understand voluntary, but once they say mandatory, what does that mean? Beyond, it means we're telling you have to get out, but they really can't back that up, can they?
No, they can't. There is, in Orleans Parish, there is our neighboring parish, Jefferson Parish. There was something that was addressed by the parish president. He said that if he had the ability to enforce it physically, he would go door to door and ask people to leave. This is something that was incredibly severe. I know that Mayor Nagin in New Orleans tried to find a way to enforce it legally, but it just wasn't going to happen.
Yeah.
The fear is also, there are 35,000 people in the Superdome, and there are a number of plazas that are situated in different levels.
Let me stop you just very quickly so I can be sure of that. You're saying there are currently 35,000 people in the Superdome?
Yes, plus or minus 2 or 3,000, I'm sorry.
Wow.
It's a significant number. And
that's a big number, yeah.
Most of the people that have gone there went with insufficient
supplies.
Ration.
Yeah.
And some people just went with the clothes on their back and a handbag.
So there's going to have to come to be a way to supply these people if the worst scenario comes true. I don't know what they do, airdrops or something.
I have no idea. I do know that National Guard has slowly made its way into parts of downtown New Orleans. I don't know how effective they will be when the water does come, and it sounds like it will certainly happen.
Well, you know, in my mind, when I hear mandatory evacuation, I think, well, okay, the National Guard is going to swarm in. People are going to be going, you know, National Guard going door to door, making people leave. But there probably wasn't time for that kind of thing, was there?
No, there wasn't. At 3:00, when I actually had the ability to leave the city, I got right on the interstate and, I sat there and parked the car for an hour before there was any flow of traffic. It was very difficult leaving, and some people, I think, really just thought this was going to be a very strong storm, but did not realize that there is an enormous amount of water that can breach the levee. mainly from the lake, and it's becoming more and more frightening. I've tried to get in touch with friends in New Orleans and tell them this for hours. That I'm hearing mainly through, luckily through talk radio, that this really could be something frightening with.
I also wonder how many people are going to be caught on the highways.
Well, I saw a significant number of people that don't have the ability. New Orleans has a high level of poverty. 24% of the people in New Orleans live in poverty, and
right.
they just don't have the ability to leave. And Mayor Nagin was trying to commandeer some public transportation buses.
He mentioned that buildings and vehicles could be commandeered.
Yeah, it was. I do have to give the city of New Orleans and other parishes and police officers and a lot of credit, because they certainly did do as much as they can, and they worked very well with each other, moving from parish to parish, state troopers and government officials worked very well, and a lot of people just really woke up, and that's when the evacuation really began for, I think, a significant number of New Orleanians.
Okay, I've got somebody who's fast-blasted me here, a Dean in San Diego caller, and he says, you know, the United States has never before lost a city. That's certainly true. We have not lost a city in my memory. So he goes on to say, even if no life is lost, too late for that, I guess, what would it do to America to lose one of its biggest cities?
Well,
that's a big one to throw at you, but what do you think it would do to America to lose one of its big cities?
I really
I don't. I, of course,
it's hard to digest.
Yeah,
it's frightening because I think about how much life will change in New Orleans. This is something that many people will never recover from. Everything that they have will be lost, and
yes.
their jobs. There's a lot of small business owners. New Orleans does not have large commerce, and you really start to think about that, how deeply people's lives will be affected.
No, you're exactly right, caller. Listen, thank you very much. I've got to scoot along, but a whole lot of things struck me. One of the things that struck me right between the eyes was the fact that in New Orleans right now, they'll take the cameras around, you'll be able to see there aren't sandbags. Some people, I suppose, have boarded up, but there have been no heroic efforts to sandbag. Pretty much people have taken what they can, their, you know, valuables, things they cannot replace in any way at all, and they've gotten in automobiles and simply left with what little they can carry. Sort of an attitude of, if it's going to happen, there are no sandbags, there's no little heroic efforts that can save this, it's going to be a lost city. And I kind of agree with the person, Jeff, who sent this, not Jeff, Dean in San Diego. It's a question that I would like to throw out for all of you. How would it affect us, just psychologically, to actually lose, an American city? To have an American city become uninhabitable? What would that do to America's psyche? It's a pretty interesting question. We'll be right back. Very briefly, let me roll over this again. We're asking that people call the following numbers only if you're in the affected area, okay? We'll take your call at this point right away. We're going to plow into calls from all of you. In other words, we're going to do what talk radio does and talk to you. So first-time callers, area code 775-727-1222. Now, again, that's for people in the affected area only, as is this number, area code 775-727-1295. And then, of course, east of the Rockies, toll-free at 1-800-825-5033. A wild card line, you're on the air. Good morning.
Good morning, Art. That last caller, in his voice, did you hear fatigue or fear? Hard to tell.
There's an interesting question. Yeah, I'd have to think about it a little bit. Maybe a mixture.
I just got a report from a friend of mine that's trying to head out of the area there, and he's still stuck on I-10 headed east.
That's exactly what I was kind of trying to ask about. That I wonder how
he was headed. Interstate or Highway 90 going north.
Uh huh.
And which is, you know, Louisiana has got some of the worst roads in the country.
Does it?
Oh, it does. New Orleans proper is a really nice area, but when you get in the outlying areas, Art, just like the caller said, it's very poor. It's very industrialized. In other words, they don't fix anything until it breaks.
I wonder how many of these poor people are still there, weren't able to get out, didn't have any bus come by with National Guard people to pull them out.
You've got a lot of them. And I guarantee you that, and I'm guaranteeing they're on their knees praying right now. Maybe some of them don't even realize what's happening. But, look at Whitney hit on something about the energy crisis, if this was to hit New Orleans proper. Actually, south of New Orleans is Houma. You got Morgan City. You got pretty much, I know you have two refineries there. You may have three now. They may have closed one down in the past. But a lot of folks don't realize that when refineries, your gas trucks that come to your local gas stations, they don't go to the refineries to pick their oil up. Everything is piped
my
out.
My God, sir. I'm reading CNN headline news right now that the price went up $3 already.
Oh, come on.
No. That's not the price of gas, I guess, but the price of, the oil futures,
barrel,
that kind of deal.
Yeah.
But $3, so...
Well, what I was trying to say is that all the gasoline, after it's refined, is put in pipelines and sent to regional centers. And if anything happens with that pipeline, or the refinery shuts down for even a day, maybe 3 days, your gas is going to go up half dollar a gallon.
A half dollar a gallon.
That's immediate.
Yeah, they're saying that about 600,000 barrels is pumped every single day. So, holy
this
mackerel.
I cannot sleep right now. I know I've got things I have to do tomorrow, but, I could not go to bed this morning.
The same problem I've been having. In fact, I had that yesterday morning. The news was breaking all over the place about this. It was in the middle of that strengthening when for a time it went to 175 miles an hour and it went to Cat 5 just like that. And I was glued to the coverage. I'm a total news junkie.
We know our Thursday. When this thing came in, and everybody thought this thing was going to come in between North Miami and Palm Beach. And this little crazy storm, a Category 1 hurricane, took a jog south and tore up some friend of mine's places down in Homestead, Florida.
Oh.
Dumped 16 inches of rain. Then this thing did something they never thought it was going to do, come across the Everglades, go south again, and tear up Marathon, Florida in the Keys,
right,
and get down into Key West.
Right.
Then it was headed, slapped Panama City, which I'm in Columbus, Georgia. And when Opal came up, which is a Category 5 before it made landfall, hit Panama City and it was Category 3. Then it came up our area about 220 miles. And we had 60-mile-an-hour winds here in Columbus. And it was just terrible here. And these people here in Nashville, Tuesday in Nashville, and in Birmingham, they're going to probably have 75, 80-mile-an-hour winds out of this thing. It's just unreal.
You're quite right. I appreciate the call. I'm sure that's going to occur and worse. This, of course, is going to move, as you might imagine, right toward the northeast corridor. It's going to go over a bunch of mountains. There is going to be terrible flooding. And all kinds of things that are going to come of all this. But again, I want to go back to Dean's question of San Diego. I thought it's so relevant in a lot of interesting ways. We never have lost a city. We've never lost a city in the U.S. that I'm aware of. If we were to actually lose one of our major cities, I know it's absolutely unthinkable, but if we did, how would it affect the American psyche? I think there would be a very deep effect indeed. East of the Rockies, you're on the air. Hello.
This is Ed.
Yes, Ed, where are you?
In South Georgia. We're getting some feeder bands off this thing right now.
I see.
You know, some rain's coming up outside. I'm sure it's from the same storm. But at any rate, I just heard him say the guy, 35,000 people in the dome.
Yes.
I'd heard 10,000, and then I'd heard 35,000. But however many people are in there right now, I used to lay the turf down in there.
Yes, sir.
And you have what's inside called a micro weather system inside the dome itself.
Right.
So assuming that the dome withstands the storm surge and the wind, and these people survive that, when the power goes out, it's going to start raining inside the dome.
Yeah, I've heard, my dad told me when I was a youngster, he worked for a company that made very large helicopters. At that time, it was Piasecki.
Right.
And they made the big double-blade helicopters, and they had hangars.
CH-47.
That's right. They had hangars for these aircraft that were just gigantic. And
really?
It
would rain inside the...
That's correct.
That's right.
And so,
I've seen lightning inside the Superdome.
Lightning?
Yes.
When you have
these little systems, one will form on one end, one will form on another. When they meet, just like on the outside, you got a negative and positive charge, and you have actual lightning, man. I'm telling you right now.
So it's going to be very, very uncomfortable.
And these people, they say these people didn't even bring, you know, their food, nothing with food or anything like that. It's going to be a mess down there.
I think a lot of them are probably...
And I think our prayers need to go out to them.
In poverty, a lot of them in poverty. They probably didn't have much to bring.
Exactly.
Everybody else who had the ability, had a car, had a friend, had something, got out of the city.
Got out somehow.
I would think.
But they do. I used to put the turf down, and I remember standing at one of the entrances going under the dome, you know what I'm saying?
Yes.
And I looked out, and, you know, I thought a sprinkler had come on inside the dome. Went outside, and there was a little cloud up there in the top of the dome, and it was raining.
That is so odd.
That is weird, isn't it?
It is really weird. And one anchor standing in front of one of those green screens, you know, with the hurricane plot behind him and everything, was trying to explain something about the hurricane. And the other anchor kept interrupting him, and he went berserk. he threw his papers down and said, "If you'd let me talk." And so that shows you how high the tension is beginning to get in these news reporting organizations. You'd almost never see anything like that on camera, but he got, pretty angry. And so obviously we're all under a lot of tension right now, and I would ask you to consider that also as you decide what you're going to say on the air. Because it is your turn, coming right up. God willing, it won't happen. But again, somehow... The San Diego Fast Blaster caught me, and I've been thinking about it ever since. We've never lost a city. We've never lost a city. God willing, that wouldn't happen, but if it did, how would it affect the American psyche? How would it affect America to lose a whole city? It's the unthinkable, but I guess here we are, talk radio, so we can think a little bit about it. The worst case scenario, if we were to lose an American city, how would that affect us? It surely would. First time caller line, you're on the air. Good morning. Hello?
Good morning.
Yes, sir.
How are you?
I'm fine. What is your first name and where are you?
My name is Mario, and I'm in Welsh, Louisiana right now.
Okay, where is that?
That's between St. Charles. I'm sorry, I'm on a cell phone. Between St. Charles and Lafayette.
Yes, sir.
And the main thing is it took me 12 hours to get from New Orleans to where I'm at.
Oh, so you're an evacuee.
Yes, sir.
You have a home in New Orleans.
Yes, sir, and I'm very afraid of what's going to happen to my home.
Yeah, I'm sure you are, and I'm sure although you've been driving, so you probably haven't seen much of anything. Are you now in a place where you can, you know, stop and watch the media, or are
well,
you?
I'm fortunate that my wife works for a company that owns a bunch of apartment complexes, and we were able to stop at one of them that had an opening. Open residence, and we were able to take it over. But the main thing is because what you're saying about New Orleans is I think it will never be a dead city. It's what you're saying. You know, it's an American city. We will be back. You know what I mean?
Mario, if it was essentially destroyed, if this horrible mixture of stuff made it uninhabitable for a very long period of time, do you think the people of New Orleans would want to rebuild where it is now, or would they rebuild New Orleans in a new place?
Just like they would in every Gulf Coast city in along the Gulf Coast, of course they would. You know, it's a great city. It's a city of history and great faith and everything. And we're all looking for this storm that passes by. I mean, I've cried like 3 times today just thinking about what could happen to my own home. You know,
I bet
I'm sorry, I'm nervous and everything, but just alone, just my home and my other friends' homes and businesses that I know that own there, I'm afraid of what's going to happen to everybody there, and it's really heartbreaking for me.
Mario, are you outside now?
Yeah, I'm actually there's wind blowing in my ear right now.
I was going to say I can hear the wind affecting the cell phone.
I'm sorry, I had to get away from the radio because you said to get away from it.
You did the right thing. All right, Mario. So you've got everything at risk back home.
Everything. And I came here with, you know, my, you know, the titles to my house, my everything that I own and everything. And I'm sitting out here in the middle of somewhere. I don't even know where the hell I'm at, to tell you the truth. and it's just a heartbreaking situation. You know, we don't know what we're going to go back to.
Are there a lot of people around you, Mario? Are a lot of other people who stopped roughly where you stopped?
Unfortunately for myself, because of where my wife works at, that I'm able to stay, I'm somewhere that other people aren't able to get to. It's not a regular hotel or anything. It's an apartment complex. But, you know, you should see the people alongside the road. The things that I saw today were just, this was the best evacuation I've ever seen from the city. I've been in 2 others before, and this.
Mario, I don't think they've ever evacuated a large American city.
I mean, we evacuated a few times before, but not because we had to before.
Gotcha.
But this is the best one I've ever seen.
So it went pretty well.
It took us a long time to get here, but I think the reason why it took us a long time to get here is because there were quite a few rude people taking the emergency lane roads and covering those up when they shouldn't have been covered up and doing a whole lot of things that shouldn't have been done. But, you know,
but still, by and large, you think it's gone well.
Oh man, it's gone great.
Okay, Mario, thank you very, very much for the call. There's an evacuee, somebody who left everything at home and just left. And I guess took, as he said, the deed to the house, that sort of thing. Hope the deed means something. We're watching very carefully. It's a Category 4 storm now. Winds remaining, though, unfortunately, at 155 miles an hour, but downgraded to a Category 4 with about 115 millibars right now. I think 115 millibars is correct, or 915 millibars, excuse me. And that is remarkably low. And that little fight they had on CNN that I was telling you about, he was trying to explain at the time how really low that was and what that would mean if you were actually looking at your barometer. Wildcard Line, you're on the air. Good morning.
Hello.
Hi.
Hi. Yeah, I was speaking to you before and got cut off.
Oh, that's right. Your first name is?
Evie.
And where are you?
I'm in Baker, Louisiana.
Baker,
not
Louisiana.
Not too far, about an hour away. And we're getting some rain, but not a lot. But basically, I haven't been able to listen to the show. I've been on the phone with friends, and my friends are just flipping out, and it's starting to just sink in because we're not really accept, because we're all from New Orleans, and it's not really sinking in completely, and we just go to extremes. We're like, oh, my God, the city's going to be gone, and then the next thing is, it'll be okay.
Did you evacuate from New Orleans to Baker?
Yes.
You did?
Yes, I did, and I have friends in Houston and friends in New Orleans still, and friends just all over the place, Tennessee, Florida. People are just leaving. But I have one friend who is just, his whole family is there, you know, not staying there, but, you know, he just has they have several homes there and just so much. They all grew up there, and he's just really, really worried, and a lot of fun just going to the school I go to, the university down there, where, you know, what if our school disappears? You know, it's such, I mean, it's such a cultural mecca. It's just such a wonderful city. And
well, then maybe our friend in San Diego has a good question for you, and that is that if we actually lost an American city, if we actually lost New Orleans, something horrible to contemplate, how would it affect America?
Oh, God.
We've never lost a city.
No, I know. And honestly, Art, I have this, the thought of it, I think, is really what's making people break down and what's making people freak out, because just to contemplate it when we don't want to. And I don't know, I wanted to call in to say, with all of this mayhem and what you said with the anchor and everything freaking out on CNN, just for everyone, please to just take a moment, and I mean, if you pray, that's your choice, or just try and envision it. Try and envision it going the other way.
All right, all right. Thank you very much. Yeah, look, I witnessed that fight on CNN. It's stress. People under severe stress sometimes break down a little bit. I mean, it just happens. It's human. And that tells you how dire this whole situation is. People trying to explain it, people trying to come up with words to convey what's happening or what might happen. These people are under enormous stress. This is it's one of those moments in history, and we've had others, haven't we? 9/11, things that sort of tweaked the national consciousness. Well, this is one of those things. And so, again, I'm not surprised that the Princeton eggs are jumping up and down like Mexican jumping beans right now. The consciousness of America, in fact, the world, I understand this story is really hitting hard in Great Britain, for example, and being followed very carefully around the world. They understand how vulnerable New Orleans is. They understand how strong this storm is. And so this story has taken immediate and almost total worldwide attention. East of the Rockies, you're on the air. Hi.
Hi.
What is your first name, honey?
It's Sandra, and I live in Pensacola.
Yes, Sandra.
Okay, the problem we're having, well, we're getting tropical force winds. Our lights are flickering off and on.
Oh, they are.
Yeah, and some of the downtown's already flooded. The two main roads, the bridges are already closed. The problem we're having is our gas stations have no gas.
In Pensacola?
In Pensacola. Now, we get our gas from Louisiana and Mississippi.
Right.
We've already been told we're going to have a gas shortage. Now, then, on top of that, as of Friday, because we thought the storm was going to come in here, some gas stations were $3.09.
Wow.
Now, then, we've got that now. What's it going to be like when we don't have any?
Yeah, it's hard to imagine what's going to happen to the price and the availability of gasoline.
Right. And when Ivan hit here, it looked like a war zone. It looked like Iraq. It was that bad. And I can just, my heart goes out to New Orleans and to Mississippi.
But at this point, you're way over in Pensacola, and you're getting feeder bands, and you're getting power that's going on and off.
Yes.
Okay, Sandra, thank you very, very much for the report. We'll continue to move through with what we do here, Talk Radio. West of the Rockies, you're on the air. Hi.
Good evening, Art. This is Brian in Bakersfield on KMZR.
Hi, Brian.
Good evening. It's good to talk with you. And I've been trying to collect my thoughts here as best I can, listening to the calls that have been coming in.
Right.
And I know that you have been and were a good friend of the late Father Malachi Martin.
Indeed. Brian, you're going to have to yell at me. You're not too loud here. I've got you sort of pumped up as high as I can get you. So
sorry
you,
about that.
That's
Art, that better?
Better, yes.
And I'm sure over the course of the conversations that you were privileged to have with Father Malachi Martin over the years, he discussed with you the aspect of temporal consequence for sin. There are eternal consequences for sin, ultimately, but there are also temporal consequences. That is, those consequences we suffer here on earth in time. And one of those is the natural phenomena, the natural effects of the various actions we perform on earth. some being good and some being deleterious. And we don't seem to think about this until it hits us square in the face, as it were. And people tend to look at themselves and look at the people around them when something bad happens, when something on a huge scale happens, and ask, is it me? What did I do? Did I cause this? Well, the answer is not necessarily directly, but we all play a part in our surroundings and the effects we have on each other and on ourselves. And I would like to take this opportunity to say, first of all, that I'm praying for New Orleans and everyone affected by the impending storm.
It's a lot more than just New Orleans. There are many people that are going to be affected across, you know, thousands of miles.
Of course. But I am a Catholic, and the main reason I say this is that I am convinced that the Catholic faith is true, and I know that many, many people find that outrageous and incredible.
Not of the Catholic faith.
But,
well, look, you're basically, this comes down to a God is angry kind of call, right?
Well, it comes down to the reality that we're all responsible, ultimately, for our destiny.
So this is a result of sin.
Yes.
I'm not getting that wrong, right?
No, you're correct.
Yeah,
but,
okay.
But collectively, see, we have a hard time with the concept that we are all sinners. And the fact is that God many times uses one instance of justice to spare many, many other people if we take heed.
Sir, I'm going to agree with you that there's none that walks without sin, not on the globe right now. But I'm not going to cozy up to the concept of this is because of our sin. That this hurricane, this terrible tragedy, may be about to hit New Orleans and whatever other damage and death it produces because of something we did. Not in that way, anyhow. On the other hand, I also don't rule out what you're saying. I'm not a person of great faith. I'm sort of a Christian. I know, I'll get a million emails. You can't be a sort of a Christian. But I still have difficulty with the concept that this is very directly a result of any sin. That's me, right now, anyway. First time caller line, you're on the air. Hello.
Hello.
Yes.
Brenda. I'm sitting in my car listening to the rain out in the middle of nowhere. It's taken me hours to get here. I'm two states away, and I've worried to death about these people in the Superdome.
Where are you now, Brenda?
I'm in Daphne, Alabama.
Daphne, Alabama. And where did you come from?
Gulfport, Mississippi.
Gulfport, Mississippi.
Northeast quadrant.
Yeah.
Where it would be hit really bad. But you think about all those people in the Superdome. And I really feel bad for any of those people that might be listening to us now, but when they say if you go to the top of a two-story building, you could not possibly be safe with the surges that are coming in, 20-foot surges or so forth, in that Superdome below sea level.
Yes.
And nobody can tell me that it's sin that has caused these children sitting in the Superdome sleeping right now to even have to face that kind of a threat.
Yeah, I don't buy into that concept myself.
No, but I think everybody really needs to be praying for those people right now.
Prayers.
I would have taken everybody I could have out of there. However, the powers that be waited to the very last second, I feel, to have announced this type of emergency because he was criticized so badly last time for saying get out.
Yeah,
it's so late, and it was so late that I could get out. I could barely get out when I did.
So did you wait? Did you wait until it was mandatory? Is that when you left?
After it was mandatory.
That's what I'm saying.
I had obligations at work that they released me of that obligation. But these people in Louisiana, there's only one way in, one way out. And this fellow, because he was criticized so badly, he waited until there was not a chance for a lot of people to get out. And so many people, there were just a couple people in the car, and they were saying, "Take a neighbor, help somebody."
Yeah.
All these one and two people in a car, they could have taken so many people out, but everybody was just frantic by the time that announcement was made. They didn't have a chance.
Well, I can't imagine the political dynamics that were behind this. I knew that it was a very incredibly, incredibly tough call. They have never evacuated a city of this size, ever, in all of our history that I know of. And the implications of doing it alone are staggering. I mean, they know that a certain amount of death and destruction and a lot of things will occur when you order an evacuation of, you know, of this magnitude. They know that. So it's a hard decision to make. And as you pointed out, there was one made before that may have brought additional pressure to bear here, but I sure as hell would not have wanted to be the person making that decision. Would you?
Oh, heavens, no, no. He really jumped the gun last time, I felt like. I didn't think it was that much of a threat. Of course, I'm sitting in the sidelines saying it wasn't that bad of a threat. It was a bad rainstorm. That was it. So this time he's on the TV 24 hours before he makes that call saying, maybe I should, and then they're saying, would you send people house to house to try to get all these people out that can't get out on their own?
Yeah.
He just went around the question. He just danced right around it. And then you hear about people that are left in nursing homes. I understood that there was a nursing home that there was only one staff member left.
Listen to
me. Everybody else took off.
Listen to me. We're coming up on a break. Do you have the ability to hold on?
I'm going to let you go. I appreciate
you. Okay. All right. I appreciate your call. Thank you very much. And that all sounds pretty dire. This is Coast to Coast AM, doing what we do in the middle of the night. I will continue now, after the break, into the fifth hour. Good morning, everybody. I'm Art Bell. We're in our fifth hour of coverage, talking now with you on the telephone. And I'm asking that the first three lines, first-time caller line, the wildcard line in east of the Rockies, be reserved for only people in the affected areas. And I mean the areas that are virtually in peril right now, people who have evacuated, that sort of thing. The other lines, you're free to call for any other associated reason. Here are the numbers. Please listen very carefully.
To talk with Art Bell, call the Wildcard line at area code 775-727-1295. The first-time caller line is area code 775-727-1222. To talk with Art Bell from east of the Rockies, call toll-free at 800-825-5033. From west of the Rockies, call 800-618-8255. International callers may reach Art by calling your in-country Sprint access number, pressing option 5, and dialing toll-free 800-893-0903. From coast to coast and worldwide on the Internet, this is Coast to Coast AM with Art Bell.
It's a dreadful nightmare in progress right now as this horrible hurricane, packing winds still of 150 miles an hour at this hour, moves toward New Orleans, Louisiana, and the associated coastline north at 15 miles an hour. That's a little bit faster. It's sped up a little bit. The pressure at 917 millibars, which is damn low. 28.8 north, 89.6 west, the exact, I know a lot of you plot on a map. And it's beginning to happen. The winds they expected are beginning to occur now in the area. So we'll just watch it. Obviously, it's coming ashore a little faster than they thought it would. Let's see, 90 miles, rather, south-southeast of New Orleans, and 15 miles an hour, and you can do the math. But, you know, major portions of the storm are beginning to hit now. The network anchors I've been listening to are expressing fears that the levees in New Orleans will not hold. Of course, that was, you know, a fear all along. And I guess it's an appropriate time to say, pray, because there's nothing else to say, is there? Pray. As you know, on this program, we deal with a very great number of people who make predictions, whether it would be through remote viewing or whatever other extra sort of sensory method of perceiving events. We have a lot of those kind of guests, many of them. And there's only one that I know that essentially called this. And you're welcome to, you know, you're welcome to go review the tapes for yourself. But Evelyn Paglini, I think, called it right down the line in terms of what was coming and what now is happening. I assume a lot of you are with us in the overnight hours, watching the coverage, listening to us, kind of hopping and skipping around the media generally. That's certainly what I do. I'm a news junkie. And so I kind of hop and skip around the media to find out what I can find out. I'm sure you're doing the same, and if you're hopping and skipping over us at the moment, welcome. We're talking to people in the area, people who have been affected or will be by this massive hurricane. First-time caller line, you're on the air. Hi. Hello?
Yeah, my name's Tom.
Yes, Tom.
Yeah, I'm. I left my home right outside of New Orleans in a little town in the suburbs called Avondale on the west bank of the river.
Yes, sir.
And been on the road about 15 hours and just getting close to, en route to Beaumont.
15 hours on the road. You're probably beginning to get just about punch drunk by now.
Oh, yeah, I'm well into my third thermos of coffee.
I can understand. What do you think is going to happen? What do you imagine will happen to home?
Oh, I'm afraid it's just gonna be gone. You know, the way the eye of the storm is going, you know, they're saying it's gonna come right over Barataria Bay, which is directly south of my home.
Yes, sir.
And the levee on that side, they say it's only good for 7 feet. You know, and they're talking 20, 30 feet of water coming over. So.
Yeah. So
I don't think there'll be anything left.
It does indeed look as though it's just aiming. It's so incredibly aiming for New Orleans. Several days ago, if you listen to people talk, and I don't know what the talk was like in New Orleans. You were there. Maybe you can tell me. But the people I talked to seemed convinced from the beginning, and I'm going back several days now, that New Orleans was flat going to get hit. And damned if that isn't what's happening.
Yeah, well, to be honest with you, on Friday, yeah, went to work, came home, didn't knew about the storm being down there, but you know, last I'd heard, it was gonna hit the panhandle of Florida, and you know, went to sleep Friday night, and got up Saturday, did my little business around the house, turned on the TV, and you know, Category 5 heading right to New Orleans. I was shocked.
Yes. Oh, I'm sure many were. I live in the overnight hours. It's a very good point. I, of course, knew about it, but a lot of people would have been just like yourself, you know, getting up at what time of day do you normally get up?
Well, I normally get up about 5 in the morning. For, you know, so even on the weekends, I get up early just out of habit. But, you know, I don't turn on the TV, you know. The only thing, I just turn the TV on to watch the news and weather mostly.
And bang, yeah. There it was, headed right at you. So what did you do? You just packed up and took off right then, or did you what?
Well, actually, I was going to send the wife and the kids, and I was going to stay. And then, I don't know, what was it, yesterday, today, I don't know. Whenever it hit 175-mile-an-hour winds, you know, before it started calming down.
Right.
You know, and you know, when I saw it getting that big, I decided to go, too.
All right. Well, it looks like you made a good decision. Even at this hour, as the eye approaches, it looks like you made a good decision to leave. That would be my take on it. Thank you very much for the call. I think anybody who evacuated ahead of this can be said at this hour. This hour is so close to whatever it is that's going to happen to New Orleans and to everything in the path of this hurricane. At this hour, it's fair to say those who evacuated, you did the right thing. You know, in case you were wondering, oh, I heard about it lessening a little bit. Not much. 150-mile-an-hour winds, and it's closing in quickly now. So I think everybody out there on the road tonight, everybody in hotels who left home did the right thing. So if there was any question in your mind about whether you did the right thing or not, this hour says you did. East of the Rockies, you're on the air. Hi.
Yeah, this is Dennis from Lufkin, Texas, listening to you on 1200 WAI San Antonio.
Of course, yes, sir.
Yeah. Coming in real clear tonight, which is a strange thing.
A blessing. A blessing indeed. Yeah, there's been a lot of static on the radio lately, a lot of thunderstorms, so I'm glad you're getting us.
Yeah. Okay, my aunt works at Lufkin Daily News, and she just came in from work about an hour and 17 minutes ago. And she said, if you need to fill up, go do it now, because by daylight, the prices of gas here in Texas are going to be $3 a gallon also.
Oh, I believe it.
Yeah.
I absolutely believe it.
I guess they pretty much wrote those refineries off in that little valley there.
Yeah, it's just, I guess, sinking in to me how much this means. To have that refinery infrastructure gone or offline for a certain period of time, you know, we're already in a precarious situation with gas prices. This is just going to do the worst.
Yeah, well, this is where everybody says in America that they'll change their driving habits, $3 a gallon. Vacations get shorter and closer and or not at all.
Thank yeah, that's you. That's like saying get ready for a new lifestyle because
yeah.
We're on the edge of that right now.
Mm-hmm. You know, my uncle, at whenever she was saying that, we got to talking about it, and you know, he was cussing the oil companies, and I said, well, you know, there's one reason that the American oil companies could be letting the prices go up when they've always protected us before. You know, it'll help us explore new energy sources because now they're feasible. That wasn't much comfort for him, but I think that may be part of it.
Well, it's going to get a lot rougher
yeah.
before it gets better.
Yeah, he was talking about propane. Propane would be better than gas about now, wouldn't it?
It might seem better, indeed. But on the other hand, if you're talking about transportation, for example, driving, there's not much infrastructure to get you anywhere on propane right now, is there? Nor any other alternative fuel. We haven't moved that far yet. And I've been screaming and just bloody murder about the fact that we haven't, in America, begun to move toward these alternative sources. I don't know if this will do it. I don't know what will ultimately do it. I know that something will come along to cause it. I just don't know when. West of the Rockies, you're on the air. Hi.
Hi, how are you?
I'm fine, sir.
Good. Well, one thing I have to say, first of all, I'm on my cell phone, so bear with me here. You know, my condolences go out to all the people out there that's, going through this rough time. It must be pretty, unbelievable experience on them right now.
If that's your radio in the background, turn it down right away, please.
Okay.
Yeah. Never, ever have your radio on when you're on talk radio, folks. That's a big no-no. All right.
Okay. But I can't help but wonder if this could be part of maybe weather control.
You mean you're implying somebody intentionally doing this?
Yeah. There's a very interesting book out there by an author that you know quite well, Dr. Nick Begich.
Yes, I know him well.
Yeah, it's the book Angels Don't Play This Harp.
Right.
And there's some pretty interesting paragraphs in there that talk about the DOD sampled lightning and hurricane manipulation studies in Project Skyfire and Project Storm Fury.
Mm-hmm.
And there's another little paragraph in here. It's editorial 1977 in Saturday Review, and it warned about weather warfare and called it an moral issue, saying, if the world is in for a long spell of crippling weather, and we are fools and monsters if we don't get together for the purpose of monitoring a response as though our life depended on it, as indeed it does.
Mm-hmm. All right. Well, you know, I'll accept some of that. I think that there's research, for example, going into the possibility of something like HARP or something HARP-like affecting the weather, and I don't deny that I'm imagining that this experimentation is going on. That said, though, I don't for one second think that we're perpetrating this tragedy upon ourselves, as so many have thought with the 9/11 the 9/11 occurrence. I mean, a lot of people thought that, think that now. So I'm unwilling to accept that we in some way manipulated the storm to head directly toward New Orleans. That will be said to be naive by some, but I think that we cannot, we can barely predict, although one has to say they've done a wonderful job in predicting where this hurricane is going to go. Right along, they've had the center of the cone be the exact place, so, you know, kudos to the people who do that. Somebody else might say, sure, that's because they're controlling it. I'm not one of them. International Line, you're on the air. Hi.
Hi, I just want to mention that you have lost one city in history. The Great Chicago Fire cleaned Chicago clean. It was a long time ago.
Well, that's true.
But it did take out the entire city, and did rebuild, and my hopes are that New Orleans will be able to do the same thing. I'm sure the country will help.
One question, though, that I'm sure would be asked by a lot of people, sir, is the difference between Chicago and New Orleans is that New Orleans is below sea level, and so to rebuild, you know, below sea level, intentionally rebuild there, might be it might be a pretty strong argument to move it.
Yeah, I don't. I'm not an engineer, so I don't know. I mean, if it survived for for many, many years prior to this, so one could say, well, once every couple hundred years, we'll take this gamble and let these people live their lives where they've always lived their lives, and their generations before them have lived their lives, and I think there's going to be a lot of strong sediment to rebuild there.
That's it. Thank you very much. That's a very interesting question. And I wonder how some of you would answer it. Perhaps you wouldn't want to at a dire moment like this. Maybe you don't want to answer a question like that, but it's an obvious one. If something did happen to New Orleans, how strong would the argument be to not rebuild in a place that is, that begins below sea level, knowing the kind of fight you would have, that inevitably you would have again? It'd be a pretty strong argument, I suspect. First time caller line, you're on the air. Hello.
Yes, hello, Art. This is Keith. I tried calling you earlier.
Keith, turn your radio off, please.
I did.
Yes, okay.
And I'm trying to call from Arizona because the West Coast line can't get through from here.
Well, see, now, I'm sorry, Keith. You're going to have to call the West Coast line if you want to get through. Let me reiterate again, all right? These are hard and fast rules. Let me give out the numbers for people in the affected areas. And I realize you might not have heard this, but Keith had heard it. Three lines I'm going to hold for people in the affected area only. The first time caller line at area code 775-727-1222. The wild card line at area code 775-727-1295 and east of the Rockies at 1-800-825-5033. The affected area only. First time caller line, you're on the air. Hi.
Oh, hi, sir. How you doing?
I'm all right. Where are you?
I'm in Lafayette, Louisiana.
Okay.
But we left New Orleans. I left first across the causeway when I-12 to Baton Rouge. It was wonderful. There was no traffic. I was going 65 miles an hour. And then when I got to Lafayette, about 4 hours later, the causeway I-12 was a parking lot. A parking lot.
And that was how long ago?
Oh, that was Saturday.
Saturday, okay.
Oh, yeah, we left early. And then my sister was here visiting from France, from Paris.
Yes.
And she had to wait 4 hours to get a rental car. And when she finally got the rental car, she got in the rental car and she drove to Jackson, Mississippi,
mm-hmm.
where she got the plane to Atlanta and the Air France to Paris.
To back home, yeah. Okay.
So it was quite a deal. I live in an apartment, but my nephew has a beautiful home on Canal Boulevard. And he is distressed big time.
Well, all we can do at this point is pray. That's all that's left.
We have. We pray. We trust in God. We're Catholics. Not that that makes us better than anybody else, but you know, we are, and we've been praying, and the winds have come down, and I heard on the Weather Channel that it's due north, and then it's going to turn a little bit to the east.
Okay, well, we'll see how that manifests. In fact, we're watching all of that very closely. They're evacuating, of course, the bottom floors of many buildings in that area. They are almost sure that the water level is going to come up and be a problem for people on the first floors of just about anything. Wildcard line, you're on the air. Good morning.
Yeah.
Hello? Yes, hello.
Yeah. Brown is the name. I had one question I wanted to ask, and I'm going to hang up, and I want to see who's going to answer it.
Okay. Well, I'm the only person here.
Fairway spillway that was built above New Orleans to take care of the Mississippi River in case it ever did get up like that. They could break it and let it run into the Lake Pontchartrain.
Okay. Well,
you know what I'm talking about?
I do, but I'm definitely not the person who's going to be able to answer your question.
I can hardly hear you.
I said I'm not the person who's going to be able to answer your question.
Well, I've been waiting all night for somebody because I used to live in New Orleans for 5 years.
All right. Look, what we can do is toss your question out to the greater audience, which you have just done, and see if anybody out there has that answer. I detected a little bit of anger in his voice, and I'm sure there's going to be a great deal of that. There's a very great deal of stress. I understand that. For a lot of people with what's going on right now. And the best thing that everybody can do, easy to say from here in the desert, is remain calm. At this point, the way it's bearing down, if you've not left, if you're there, all you can do is pray and try and remain calm because you'll make better decisions. East of the Rockies, you're on the air.
Hi, this is Michael in Norfolk, Virginia.
Hi, Michael.
You have asked a very important question here, and I don't think anybody has addressed it as seriously as it needs to be. What would happen if we lose a great American city like New Orleans?
Yes.
This question has been addressed on your program by more than one of your esteemed guests. One that I'm going to mention now is Sean David Morton. he has predicted that the city would be left uninhabitable. He has suggested, as have others, that we could take intelligent steps towards preparing for that. And I think that needs to be addressed in a panel discussion in the future.
All right. Well, thank you very much. That's kind of what we're doing right now, is we're discussing it, not so in panel way, but with all of you. It's your turn on the lines. We're here in the fifth hour. And we're just sort of moving along, watching, praying, and Katrina is happening. From the high desert, I'm Art Bell. And remember, folks, I'm reserving three of these lines away for people in the affected area only. First-time caller at 775-727-1222. The wildcard line, 775-727-1295. And east of the Rockies, 1-800-825-5033. Now, if you're calling on any other line, you're welcome, and we'll certainly take your comments. But for obvious reasons, we're trying to keep it to those in the particular affected area and get an idea as best we can from you what's going on, what it is like right now, what you're experiencing. We're getting to that point in the program. Fifth hour of the show underway. All right, back again in our fifth hour of talk, and the talk, of course, is about Katrina. And this is kind of an interesting fast blast. It's from Jeff in Seattle, Washington, who says, a question about rebuilding. It may not be if they want to rebuild, but more like whether they're allowed to rebuild. Insurance companies may not want to insure below sea level again, and FEMA may also have something to say about it. So I suppose that's worth contemplating with the worst-case scenario. To the phones we go. Let's see. Wildcard line, you're on the air. Hello? Hello? Yes, you're breaking up, sir. Where are you?
I'm in Bonneville.
Okay, you're going to have to get to a better location. You're going to have to walk a few inches or something to get that.
I'm behind the sticks on the boat here. I'm on a watch. It's kind of difficult to do. Hey, take the.
All right. Hold it right there. You're okay now. You're on. You say you're on a boat?
Yeah, I'm on a riverboat. I'm 25 loaded barges.
And where are you actually right now?
Bonneville, Arkansas. I'm watching my.
Repeat it again. You broke up.
Bonneville, Arkansas.
Okay.
Southbound. I'm on a pilot on a riverboat here, and we're right now. This is a stressful enough job as it is, and now I got to worry about if my wife and my kids are going to get out of town.
And they're where? In
I don't know. There's somewhere on the Interstate 10. I'm not sure. What I'm hearing is that the traffic's backed up for miles.
And they were evacuating from New Orleans how long ago? How long ago, sir?
Oh, they left, early last night.
Okay.
Fort Rudder.
I don't know very much about the speed of movement on the highways, but my guess would be if they really did leave then, they're probably safe by now.
Well, I don't know. Last time I talked to them, they hadn't even got in. They were outside of Laplace, and now I can't get a hold of them. Their phones, you know, my son has a cell phone, and it's not working.
When did you last speak to them?
Oh, gee, that was at 11 o'clock last night. They left at around 7, so that was 5 hours, and they hadn't even made. Usually, from my house to Laplace is like a, I don't know, 30-minute drive.
Oh my God!
So it wasn't looking good. I got two brothers that stayed. And luckily, I talked my mother into leaving, and my two brothers—they stayed there. And
what was their? Well, if you don't mind, sir, if you could tell me, what was their thinking, their rationale for staying in a situation like that?
Well, it was more or less getting split up, and they couldn't get back together. And my brother's cars broke down. My little brother don't even have a car. My older brother, his car was in the shop. So.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody, you know, the deal was, you know, you leave at a certain time. And so my mom left, and they're kind of stuck there. So,
well, I certainly hope it all works out. I'm sorry to hear that it apparently was moving so slowly, and I hope others will call us and tell us what the current situation on the highway is. That would be a valuable call. If you're out there and you can describe the situation along the evacuation routes, that might be certainly worth knowing. Area code 775-727-1295. Let's go east of the Rockies. You're on the air. Hello.
Yes, good morning, Art.
Good morning, sir.
Yeah, I'm right in New Orleans. Ironically, I'm flabbergasted by the lack of any callers from. I seem to be the first from New Orleans.
Well, they're a little busy. We've, of course, heard from quite a number who have fled New Orleans, sir. But, no, we haven't had a lot of calls from inside New Orleans. And that's, you're really inside the city, huh?
Oh, yes, quite inside. Matter of fact, you might even call it mid-city, the very center.
Why didn't you leave?
Well, it's easier said than done, you know. There's a combination of reasons. Poverty is one of them. No car.
Right.
And there's no time to whine and make excuses. But
what kind of situation are you in now? What kind of building are you in?
I'm on the second floor of a house. You know, house.
Okay, second floor of a house.
In two apartments, and the wolf is knocking at the windows. And I think if the roof doesn't come off and the creek don't rise, I just might make it.
Yeah, well,
I mean, I'm not being flippant, but
the roof part is real important.
Yeah, I'd like to keep the top of my head on. Yeah.
What's the condition like outside now?
I would call it only blustery. I haven't stuck my head out, but
right.
You know, it's just that. Well, there goes one little pop. You don't know what that was, part of a tree or something. But you know, it's kicking up slowly. It's a slow gradient on up in activity. And I guess, let me just peek at my little battery. Yeah, 444 here.
Right.
So
landfall is landfall expected near New Orleans, CNN is saying. So
7-inch, I think. Huh?
The eye is going to apparently come very, very close to New Orleans.
Yeah.
If not over.
Yeah. One of my three children called me. That was nice. And a couple of old friends called me, long distance, though.
Mm-hmm.
It's just a combination of, certain things along with it all in a day, you know, a 24-hour period where it went from a relaxed thing to doing it and didn't have the wherewithal to do it. But, I've called you before, and I'm confident that this won't be the last time I call you.
Right. I'm with you. And so even if it gets bad, it could be the first floor perhaps would get wet or be under water, but you think you might be okay there?
Honestly, the answer is yes. As silly as it sounds, I've inverted a little two-seater couch upside down onto the bed, and that'll be my cocoon.
I see. That's as high as you're going to be able to get,
I'm glad you laughed. No, not up. Just in case the window, just in case the the wolf pokes its nose into the window.
Yes, yes, indeed.
And my little cocoon will, you know, like I say, if the roof doesn't come off and the creek don't rise, you know, over the second floor, I think I'm going to be calling you again.
All right. We'll look forward to more calls from you.
That's John from New Orleans.
All right, John.
I'm known.
Take care, buddy, and thank you.
Thank you.
All right. He's known. John of New Orleans. All right. Let me give you the east of the one that just cleared, east of the Rockies, while it's already ringing. And the wild card line, of course, at area code 775-727-1295, but from the area affected only, please. And he's right. That's actually the first call from somebody from New, still in, I guess would be a better way to put it, New Orleans. West of the Rockies, you're on the air. Hi.
Hi, Art, how are you?
All right.
Thanks for taking my call. First, I want to say you're definitely the best host of this program ever. And what I wanted to say briefly was, I don't know if you remember, I don't remember his name, but last month you had a guest on your program that said that between August 29th and 30th there would be an evacuation of thousands of people. He predicted that, and I don't remember his name, but he was obviously 100% accurate.
Yes, well, if that was in fact said, that's right on the noggin, okay.
Yeah, just wanted to remind you of that.
All right, thank you very much. Well, it may be a guest that George had. So, at any rate, if somebody obviously said that, they're right on the money. Personally, from the interviews that I have done, I'm recalling what Evelyn Paglini said, and I think if you review that, as in, you know, reviewing some kind of playback of the last time, or perhaps the time prior to that that Evelyn, yeah, it would be the time prior to that that Evelyn Paglini was on the program, she certainly nailed it. East of the Rockies, you're on the air. Hello.
Hey, Art, how's it going?
Well, it's going.
This is Chris up here in Sherwood Park, Alberta.
Yes, sir.
I can't imagine what those people are going through down there. Like, I find myself to be a sensitive, and like I can feel things, and it's just not good. I'm watching the news here. I just got off work, and it's unreal.
Yeah, it's unreal. What's happening is indeed unreal. It looks as though the eye is just about to close on land. It's just now closing on land, so
it was 30 degrees Celsius up here, and I was bitching all day, and now I feel bad.
I
should turn on the news.
Hear that. All right. Thank you very, very much for the call. First-time caller line, you're on the air. Hello. Hello? Okay. Well, somebody's got their radio on. Going once, going twice.
Hello?
Hello? Now let's try it again. Hello? All right. We lost her. And do we have you? Hello there, wild card line.
Hello?
Yes, hello.
You can hear me?
I hear you.
I had a couple of comments.
Sounds like you're outside in the wind.
I'm in Pensacola, Florida, and you can hear it. We're 200 miles from New Orleans.
You're getting a pretty brisk breeze right now.
Yeah, and they say it's going to get worse, and I had a couple of comments. You know, we've been through two tropical storms and two hurricanes since September of last year. Someone called earlier and they were talking about Ivan, and this city was devastated, and it was a category 3, a high 3. But, you know, I can only imagine what New Orleans is going through, and as bad as it is right now, those people, my house is still damaged. I mean, it's been a year, and my house is still damaged from Ivan.
Mm-hmm.
So those people are, this is just beginning for them. And the caller who made the comment about this is because of sin, I can think of nothing that I did in my life that would have caused me to have spent the last year living, and not me, but my child, having to live in the situation that we're living in.
I just don't buy into that whole theory, ma'am.
People are entitled to their beliefs.
Exactly what I was going to say. We're here as talk radio to allow people to express those kind of beliefs, but I don't buy into it, and obviously you don't either.
Oh, no. And the guilt. There may be people who do, but I can't make myself believe that there's anything that any woman in any city has done to cause this. And the other comment that I had, and it's nothing against that column, but someone had sort of criticized the mayor of New Orleans, I believe it was the mayor earlier, about not getting the word out fast enough.
Well, not making the decision for mandatory fast enough, so, she was criticizing, yes.
I know, and that may very well be, but at the same time, we've been through these storms. I've lived here for 40 years in Pensacola, and we've been through these storms over and over and over, and they say they're going to hit, and they don't. And you pack, and it's gotten away every, it seems like every 2 months, we spend $150, $200 preparing for storms, and then they don't come, and it's almost, you're not disappointed, but it's almost like, we did it again. But
I know.
Since Ivan, this city has been out of gas. I mean, we have our gas lines for 2 or 3 days have been out. I mean, you have to wait for gas. It took us losing our part of our city, and still we're still recovering. It took us to open our eyes to say, okay, we don't need somebody to tell us get out. This is 175 mile an hour winds. No one should have to tell us to prepare.
Okay.
And
well, that also is true, but thank you. Somebody has to tell you to prepare, and I can only imagine going back to the decision that had to be made. The incredible dynamics that went into that decision to order a mandatory evacuation of a major American city. My God, to make such a decision alone is, there's so many angles to it, so many potential liabilities and problems that it's just a heroic thing to even come to that kind of decision in one way of looking at it, certainly. East of the Rockies, you're on the air. Hello.
Hi, East of the Rockies?
Yes, sir.
Hi. It's a pleasure to talk to you. I wish it was under happier circumstances, and I'll be brief. I'm calling from Athens, Georgia, but they are saying that we will have outer feeder bands and the possibility of isolated tornadoes here in North Georgia.
Yes.
And I would like to say one quick thing that we hope and be prepared in the future for the people and also the little souls, the four-legged souls and the thin souls, the animals and the dogs that will need help.
Yes.
After this disaster. And the best of luck to everybody. And I just wanted to call and say that the effects are going to be quite large. And we've had floods from several of the storms that we've, this deluge of rough storms. We've experienced flooding here and tornadoes and a lot of damage here in Georgia as well. But our hearts and prayers go out to these people down in the Gulf because they all need it.
They all need it indeed. Thank you very, very much. Yes, prayers. That's all there is right now is prayers, and they are a force. I don't think you'd find too many people who would disagree with that, that prayers are a force. It may be a force associated with that other force we're examining. They may, in fact, be synonymous. But they are a force. It's real. First-time caller line, you're on the air. Hello.
Yes, good morning.
Good morning.
I'm Ted here in Butte La Rose, Louisiana, on the Atchafalaya River, which is the old Mississippi floodway.
Yes, sir.
Where they built the dam. I wanted to answer that caller's question. He's comparing earlier. He was comparing apples and oranges. What's happening now has no bearing on whether or not there's a spillway above New Orleans, which there is. There's quite an extensive flood control program, but that's for in the spring whenever all the snow melts up north and comes down to Mississippi.
Okay.
And when you buy property here in Louisiana, one of the first things that you have to go in front of a lawyer, for one thing. And one of the first things, they look right at you and they say, now you understand that before we let New Orleans flood, we will flood the entire west, you know, rest of the state. And so you shake your head in agreement, obviously, if you want to live here and you want to own something. And you know, what's going to happen to New Orleans, it looks like I'm sitting here watching it now, is that they're going to get the backflow, they're going to get the backhand of this, thank goodness, and it's actually going to push water out of Lake Pontchartrain over into New Orleans. If people could understand, if you took a saucer or took a bowl and filled your bathtub up to the edge of that bowl.
Yes.
And then put, you know, then tried to live in that bowl. So, but anyway, that yeah, there is a spillway and there's an extensive flood control program, but that's not what's going on this morning. I just looked outside and the banana leaves are just now starting to sway a little bit, but I imagine within the next 2 or 3 hours, well, we're only about 70 miles west of New Orleans, and I imagine here in the next few hours why things are going to get pretty interesting.
Pretty now. Rough, yeah.
Yeah.
Is it your opinion, sir, that they won't hold, that New Orleans will end up getting flooded? Is that what's about to happen?
Oh, you know, that's... I really don't know. I've spent a lot of time in New Orleans, and you stand there and you look up at those massive levees that they've built and those massive gates and everything, and you think, how could the water possibly get that high? But then when you sit and you look at the force that's getting ready to come down on their head in just an hour and a half or 2 hours from now, then you start to question, maybe you start second-guessing yourself. I just don't really have any kind of an educated opinion of whether it's going to hold or not. It's going to be by the skin of their teeth if it does.
All right, sir. Thank you. Perhaps that's the appropriate place to end it. For tonight, that's 5 hours of talk. We are now probably an hour, hour and a half, 2 hours at the most from the largest part of all this occurring. So I want to thank everybody involved tonight for doing what we do best, I think, on talk radio, and that is sort of, I don't know, I guess just let it open and let you talk about what's really happening. And what is really happening right now is Katrina. So God save those who have remained from the high desert. I'm Art Bell. As always, it's been an honor to be here. See you in a couple of weeks on a Sunday every now and then. From the high desert, good night and good luck.